Well, we're at 1:01, so I think we'll begin. We've got a pretty packed schedule, and hopefully we can stick to it and have a hard stop at 4 and let everybody get back to the work day. Anyway, thank you for attending the Kiss of Fall Conference via Zoom. We appreciate your time today. My name is Reese Brown. I am the Executive Director of KISSA. And it's great to see so many of you on the call today. We've been in a unique time. Now that COVID has certainly impacted so much of our lives. We've ridden that roller coaster from the mid-March doom and gloom to the late summer optimism. The world is not without challenges now, but KISSA has been working hard with our scariest suppliers and supporters to create new operating procedures fitting to the current time. Like many of you, we are looking forward to ski season and the diversion it will bring to our daily life. As this virus is not going away soon, I hope you have found your new level of risk and are comfortable moving about your daily life. As I mentioned, KISSA has been hard at work trying to understand what COVID will mean to the industry and as we approach the, the coming season. Specifically, we've been running biweekly Zoom calls. I recognize many of you from being on several of those calls over the years, so that's been great. We've had incredibly creative ideas coming out of these calls, nothing short of amazing, and it's been an honor to moderate those. We've also implemented a significant media outreach plan that has seen several cross-country specific placements around the country, and we do have a piece coming out in Town and Country magazine that should launch right around Thanksgiving. So that is pretty exciting. We are continuing discussions with members of ski areas and our suppliers and problem solving and working through the various issues. Hopefully you'll learn about some of those today. And all indications are that this will be a big year for both equipment sales and skier days. This idea is supported by several anecdotal observations as well as many metrics. Certainly where I live up in New England, by March 15th, many people had moved to their winter homes and have stayed ever since. This has played out not only in New England, but in the Midwest, in Colorado, in Tahoe, and I'm sure many other areas. So people are hunkered down for winter, and hopefully they will be hitting the trails. Certainly the trails and the rivers and the lakes this summer were saw increased visitors, and we're expecting that trend to continue as we go into winter. Metrics supporting that, certainly KISSA's consumer website has seen 145% increase in the last couple of weeks page views, 125% increase in unique visitors. So we're definitely getting some eyeballs, which is exciting. Hopefully you've seen the new website that we launched this summer. And we hope that that trend continues, as I believe it will as we get closer to winter. Also, retail sales are booming and season pass sales are selling well, with many new people purchasing early and preparing for winter. So that's an exciting trend. This will be a great winter for cross-country skiing, and I know we are all excited to have it begin. So with that, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Yellowstone Track Systems. They've been a great partner of KISSA for many years, and they build amazing grooming equipment, one of which is in the silent auction, and I will put up that link shortly. Thanks also to our presenters. We have Richard Hodges, president of the KISSA Board of Directors, and White Pine. President of the board and White Pine Nordic director and founder of 10 Week Winter. We also have Kelly Davis from Snow Sports Insights, Steve Poulin, president and CEO of Switch Sport USA, Bruce Deal, Tyrell Sports Group, rep for Salomon and Swix, Mike Hussey from Reichert Nordic, Nick Mahood from Woodstock Nordic, Sally Jones from Tahoe Donner, Greg Rhodes from PSA, Scott McGee from Peak Performance, and George Davis from 22 Nordic and Preschool Ski School. A couple housekeeping issues. If you can keep your mics muted unless you are speaking or invited to speak. We do have a silent auction And I, as I said, I'll put that link in the chat in just a moment, but please feel free to bid often and high. We will take two short breaks, as this is a long 3-hour seminar, one at the top of each hour. And I ask you to keep logged in and, take care of what needs to be done, get your water, et cetera, and then come back. And please use the chat and question area at the bottom of your screen. We're hoping to build some good dialogue today. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Richard Hodges, our illustrious president of the KISA board. Richard.
Wow, illustrious president. I'm feeling special. Afternoon, everybody in the East, and still morning here in the West. Thank you for joining the KISA fall meeting. It looks like we've got a very full agenda of interesting things and topical things for this upcoming season. I'd like to thank our sponsors and another plug for the silent auction. All of that money goes directly to help support KISA and keep us on the air. We're getting, I just had my first on snow ski of the winter yesterday. And so things are ramping up here in the West. Our customers are extremely excited. I think that's probably covers everyone across the country, as skiers are just waiting anxiously to get back out on snow. And for us as ski area operators, that means we need to hit the ground running right now. I'm representing the board of directors. I'd like to welcome everyone and hope we have a very good session. It's an interesting season coming up. Depending on where you are in the country, there are various restrictions or lack of restrictions on group gatherings, on business activities, and it is a very dynamic, changing daily here in Utah situation where we're just trying to be flexible and make contingencies on a daily basis of how we can manage our expected large increase in participation and how to deal with our expected large increases in sales and lessons and rentals and everything else. So I think we'll get some good value out of the sessions today that kind of go over the highlights of the Zoom calls over the last 6 months and talking about rentals, events, lessons, the whole gamut, all of the things that are important to us right now as the season is right before us. So with that, I think the key for today is to learn and plan on being very flexible and versatile as things develop over the next several weeks and up into the holiday season. So that so welcome and thank you.
Thank you, Richard. This is going to be an interesting year, many fronts. So we'll move into our first presentation. This winter is looking epic. Kelly Davis from Snow Sports Insights is with us. For those of you that don't know Kelly, she has over 25 years of experience in market research, including 11 years as director of research for SIA, the Snow Sports Trade Association, and most recently 3 years as the senior director of research for the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. In addition, for the past 3 years, she has worked with KISA to help improve our research and will be part of a new initiative that we will discuss later in this conference. So Kelly, let me turn it over to you, and I will share my screen so you can see that your PowerPoint. Okay, Kelly, you're muted. Kelly, you're muted.
Rookie mistake. Thanks, Reese. I didn't say anything of great import there. I do think it's going to be a season for the books for cross country, and there are a lot of different reasons. I mean, the first obviously being COVID-19 and what's going on with the trends, unfortunately, with that particular disease. Also, it's, you know, regardless of COVID, we've got La Nina conditions this year, and we've already had two polar vortex events. For instance, you know, it was snowing in Abilene, Texas on October 27th. So we're seeing that low pressure leak out of the Arctic a little bit early, and I expect to see that sporadically through the season, which just means that you know, it's going to get ridiculously cold in parts of the United States that aren't used to being ridiculously cold. But the conditions for snow sports are going to be excellent in the northern half of the United States. Additionally, and related to COVID-19 are the advantages that cross country has over downhill, and the problems that downhill are likely to have this year, including the fact that unemployment's still at 6.9%, and that's about 4 million people out of work. With no stimulus on the forecast, it becomes fairly difficult for people to afford to do things like downhill skiing, where the resort is further from where they live. Lift tickets, walk-up lift tickets at many resorts are way over $100, and the learning curve for casual skiers is fairly high. All of those high bars for entry into downhill could lead to not only increases in participation in cross country, but also increases in participation for alpine touring. I'll stick with cross country for now. So let's talk about COVID-19. Should be the second slide, Reese. So right now we're generally speaking, we're at a high for infections, and there's no information that leads me to believe that this is going to slow down anytime soon, at least certainly not until January. Utah, one of the most conservative states in the union, just passed a mask mandate, with their governor saying very, very difficult things in terms of policy for people that don't want to wear a mask. But, you know, keep in mind that Utah is full of downhill resorts, particularly destination resorts, and they're very, very worried about the loss of revenue for people that are unwilling to travel to their resorts this season. But, you know, at 130,553 infections yesterday, and, you know, no, and basically the velocity of the data indicates that's only going to go up. We're looking at a very difficult time to deal with COVID. Go ahead, Reese. Next slide. So this is what's going on with the weather. La Nina conditions are basically dictated by the temperature of the surface water in the equatorial Pacific. As you all know, an El Nino means that the water's warmer, and that leads to different winter conditions than what we're seeing here. What a La Nina condition does is it generally makes the northern half of the United States colder and wetter than normal. And that spells success for cross country. I've seen seasons like this before, and this is really, really promising. And we're already seeing low fronts just basically swooping out of the Arctic. And the reason it's called a vortex is because it spins in a counterclockwise motion. So it's basically sort of a weather eddy that just circles cold and moist air above wherever it leaked down from. So we're looking at places like Wisconsin, Minnesota, Seattle, and the Northeast being colder and snowier this winter than normal. Along with the polar vortex that could drip down as far as Texas and Louisiana, every time you see that happening, every time you see that abnormal kind of weather happening in places that you normally don't see it, including places like Washington, D.C., where I am, you know, you see the poor weather guys standing on a sidewalk somewhere on a normally busy street, and 9 times out of 10, there's a cross-country skier behind him. Somebody just cruising out, getting their equipment, and cruising right out their door, which generally is one of the advantages that cross-country has over downhill, is that people can do it from their doorstep. They don't necessarily have to travel anywhere. We're already seeing it in retail sales. You know, we've talked to suppliers that are already talking about shortages, that are already trying to get equipment from Europe that didn't sell last year, doing everything they can to keep their shelves or their retailers' shelves full. And the consumer is behaving differently as well. The consumer, who normally waited until snow fell on their shoulders to start really thinking about what they're going to buy for winter, are buying early now. And I think, you know, it might be the toilet paper effect. I think that pretty much traumatized all Americans. That, you know, if you don't get it while you can, there's likely to be scarcity. It's like the introduction of scarcity into the American market has scarred the psyche of American consumers, and maybe not in a bad way. This year, we're already seeing sales that are up to 3 times larger than they were at this time last year for cross country equipment. Go ahead, Reese. I'm going to show you a little bit about the polar vortex before we finish with weather. which is the next slide. This is what it looks like. This is what it looks like when Arctic air seeps out from the Arctic. And as you can see, I mean, it basically just is an eddy in the middle of the United States. And you know, this is going to be a year when we sell puffies in Louisiana. Who knows? Maybe Atlanta will freeze over again and people have to spend the night at Piggly Wiggly again. I remember when that happened. We'll see. I think this is likely to happen, maybe even a few times a month this season. Go ahead to the next slide. So in this case, I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on at Downhill Resorts. First of all, and I think you all know this, I mean, reservations are going to be required to even get into the parking lot of a lot of resorts this season, especially during weekends. So capacity is going to be drastically limited during Saturdays and Sundays, which are obviously the most popular days to go skiing. Probably see a little bit of increased participation during the week, but you know, that's a wait and see kind of a thing. Lift capacity has been decreased. So what they're doing in many resorts is they're limiting capacity on the lift to one, unless you're with people that are sort of in your bubble and you have to identify them as such. But this is going to slow capacity down. In addition to having to have a reservation, lift lines are going to be just as long, which is going to decrease satisfaction in the experience. Ski school capacity is going to be severely limited. You're not going to be able to drop your kids off for the day at the children's center and watch them learn how to ski during the day. That's just not going to happen this year. And even more importantly, the experience of skiing includes a lot of opera and a lot of lodge festivities, and that's going to be severely limited this season, especially considering the COVID numbers and how they're going up and limitations to crowd size and, you know, how you can serve customers at a restaurant or a bar. That's going to severely limit what you can do at Downhill. So you're looking at high risk, high costs, and a limited experience across the season. And consider that, you know, at Vail Resorts, for example, a walk-up day ticket, which you can't get anymore, you're going to have to order it online, is over $200. So imagine having the limits to this experience coupled with the high cost. I think it's really going to hurt Downhill this year. Go ahead, Reese. So I just wanted to show you what participation has looked like across the last 5 years or so. Really, cross country sits at about 5 million. And this data comes from the Physical Activity Council. That includes SIA and OIA and football and sports and fitness industries and racket industries and tennis and golf. So this is a huge study that they do every year. You know, when we were getting this data, we would smooth it by averaging the past two seasons along with the season we just got. So because this data was really spurious, meaning that, you know, you get huge spikes and low lows, high highs. So we wanted to make sure that we were giving what was basically a guide to the level of participation. And if I average that across the years, especially across the last 5 years, it works out to about 5 million cross-country skiers and about 3.5 million snowshoers. What I would expect this season, considering that, and I think all of you saw this at your trailheads this summer, there were places in this country that you had to get a reservation just to park at a trailhead. There are places where participation in hiking and trail running was up 300%. I mean, it was just nuts. And the Physical Activity Council that produces this data indicated that 40% of the people on those trails were brand new participants that had never been outdoors before. Earlier in the pandemic, right around April, late April, I got together a group called the Research Forum that includes basically all the researchers from those particular industries, golf, tennis, health and racket, football, and everybody that I could find that had helped me with research in snow sports, we got together and basically we spent about 10 minutes laughing that our marketing message all along should have been stay home. Because you know what we're seeing is that people need to be outdoors, and with social distancing requirements and really just people's need to be out of their home, especially when you're working at home, your kids are in school at home, you need to have a safe outlet to get outside and to de-stress and to be healthy, that it's going to crowd trailheads this season. And considering all the data that we're seeing, I expect participation numbers that could double. We could have 10 million cross-country skiers this year. We could have 6 million snowshoers. It might not be completely at the ski areas. It might not all happen at cross-country groomed trails, but certainly we're seeing consumers buy the equipment and with the expectation that they'll use the equipment maybe outside of their front door. And we're going to be looking at how to measure that as the season goes on. But those are the reasons I think it's going to be an epic season. It's a multivariate equation. And I'm gonna keep measuring it throughout the season. And, you know, if we're seeing any aberration from the expected trend, we will let you know. But just imagine 10 million participants. Imagine a doubling of the participation that we've seen over the past 5 years. And then imagine what you need to do to retain those participants. And cross country has a much lower level of entry in terms of access. It's easy to learn. Anybody can get in cross-country skis and participate right away. You know, you don't need the 3 days you need in downhill and the bumps and bruises to figure this out. You can get in the tracks and go right away. And if somebody can have a good experience the first time they go cross-country skiing and continue to do it in a winter where almost all of their other activities are pretty much curtailed, we've got a huge opportunity to bring a lot more people into cross-country and frankly, snowshoe. And snowshoe is the easiest of all. You just snap the shoes on and off you go. I think cross-country skiers are going to have to figure out a way to deal with capacity issues. It's very possible that you could reach capacity on weekends and have to limit attendance at the ski area. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. This is simply a projection, but I expect this to be an absolutely epic season for cross-country.
Awesome. Kelly, thank you. I'd like to open it up to any questions. And while we're waiting for questions to come in, Kelly, you mentioned, actually in our Zoom calls, we'd been talking about a 130% increase in skier days. And you and I had the conversation, is that a number that we could actually quantify? And you said, no, we really can't based on cycling and hiking, et cetera. But that was the number that I just kind of stuck with and that we discussed recently, though, in our last call. We talked about what if that surge was significantly larger and what would we do? And certainly in the Zoom calls, we've been looking at the choke points and all of that. So that's been, that's been a great conversation, but I think you're right. You know, one of the nice things with cross country is there is that group that doesn't need to go in the lodge. They've got their season pass. They've got their equipment. They know the ropes. They just drive in, boot up and go and then leave that way. So we can do that where Alpine can't. Going back, I'm still waiting for questions from anyone else. So if you've got a question, please type it in there. One question, Kelly, when looking at weather, how likely is it that our major metropolitan areas will get snow this year?
It's very likely. And I'm thinking about New York and Boston, Chicago, Seattle. Those are areas that are likely to be very cold at times during the season because of a polar vortex, and they're going to be colder than normal anyway because of the La Nina pattern, and very likely to get snow. I mean, we're going to have a lot of the backyard effect where it was actually a study done by the University of New Hampshire that showed that participation at resorts around Boston went up 20% anytime it snowed on the shoulders of people in Boston. So falling snow makes people think about snow sports and amps up participation. I think we're going to see that several times this year.
Yeah, I think you're right. We did have a question about status of the major events like the Berkey. I don't want to spend too much time on the Berkey at this point. We'll come back to that. But they are planning on running a slightly different schedule over, I think it's 5 days of races. And I believe they have, or they had a couple weeks ago, about 7,000 people registered for that. So that is coming. We got a question from Lisa. Is there a general capacity limit for XC skiers on trails, something like X amount of people per kilometer? Interesting you asked that, Lisa. I had that question from Canada, and I did go back to all of our consultants out there, and none of them had any calculations for a reasonable number of people on a trail or in a given area. Alpine has some of those numbers, but they're rarely used from what I understand. So we don't really have that. Any other questions for Kelly regarding this season? Or Kelly, what, I mean, we've talked about the what we saw in biking and hiking and the trailheads. How closely do you think winter will parallel that?
I think it's going to be a little bit less, simply because people are reticent to go out in the cold. But also point out that 80% of the participants in snow sports only participate about three times a season. They're very casual. 20% have been pass holders over the last decade. And if resorts have to prioritize pass holders on the weekend, that leaves about 80% of their 8 million to 10 million participants out, forgive the pun, in the cold. That could very well amp up cross country too, simply because, you know, people are going to be looking for what they can do that has a lower price point, is accessible, and they can actually get into this season. So, yeah, I think that's likely to help cross country as well.
Interesting. And we do have a question from Nate talking about parking, in that Nordic centers historically haven't had a lot of issues with parking. Very few have satellite parking areas. Very few have parking attendants. But this could be the year where our parking lots overflow and people end up parking on the roads, much like they did this summer. I know Tahoe Donner does have a satellite parking. We'll call Sally in later to just touch on what they do on that. Any other questions for Kelly on the future of this epic season so far? And if not, we'll move on to our second presentation, our kind of supplier retailer update. You know, I've had the opportunity to talk to pretty much all of our suppliers and several reps over the course of the spring, summer, and fall, talking about what they're seeing and also, you know, more importantly, how they're preparing for what we think will be an onslaught of entry-level sales, you know, and really looking at inventory levels, et cetera. We've had several Zoom calls with retailers, with reps, and with suppliers, so those have been interesting. But we think we are anticipating significant cross-country ski sales coming into this season. We've got two people with us today to discuss that. The first I'd like to introduce is Steve Poulin, President and CEO of Swicksport USA. Steve is going to speak a bit about trends he is seeing in sales of poles and wax, and then as well as clothing. Steve, is that a good start for you?
Yeah, that's fine. That's great. Thank you. Well, it's really nice to see a lot of faces. From a supplier's perspective, it's been an interesting journey. We've had, in the spring, of course, we were all confused. We didn't know what the direction would be. We didn't know if there would be a winter. There were a lot of question marks, I think, in a lot of different industries and in, I think, life in general. And, you know, it took some time to figure it out. And as Kelly said, you know, as we started to get into the summer, we started to see these trends, these summer trends of water sports, camping, bikes, inline skates. We started to see this craze for people to be outside. And, you know, we were going through the summer as a company, as a supplier, really deciding, okay, do I bring all my equipment in? Is it going to be, is the spike going to continue in the craving to go to be outside? And, you know, I can't answer for all suppliers, but what Swix and Toco did, what we did, we kept all our orders in place. We kept everything in place because we thought it was our responsibility to be there for the retailer and the consumer to have product readily available if there was if this trend was going to would continue in the winter. So we actually we actually kept everything in place. Looking back on it, probably smartest move I've ever done in 25 years, you know, to keep all my orders in place and fill my warehouse up with poles and wax and tools and clothing and hats and gloves. So as we started to get through the summer, we started to see these trends. And I think a couple of the sales reps will touch upon this. We started to see trends in early cross-country ski sales. And it all starts from the packages first, the core equipment, the hardware. So we started to see these, you know, record sales or reorders from retailers based upon the demand from consumers. And as Kelly said, people, if there's one thing they learned this summer, is that if you don't purchase equipment early, there will not be any left. And I truly believe, and we can see that now through early ski sales in July, August, and into September, that this this trend is continuing, and people did learn a lesson this summer. They couldn't buy their paddleboard because they were sold out. So, you know, looking at this from an accessory supplier standpoint, we actually we anticipated a tick, an increase in September. And we saw it. We saw an increase of orders from retailers that were selling more equipment earlier or wanted a larger preseason order. And, you know, just last week, I sent an email to all our sales reps to say we sold 4,000 pairs of poles in 2 days. And it wasn't necessarily to two accounts, two big accounts. It was from specialty shops that were seeing a lot of the demand in recreation. We know race is stable. We know race, whether it snows or not, we people find snow and they race and they compete. It may look a little different this year, but we saw this recreational spike in accessories. So we see it in the hardware, the core boots, binding skis. Now we're seeing it in the pole category, in the clothing category. And next we anticipate this to move to the smaller accessories like wax and tools and gloves and hats and all the smaller accessories. So, that's what we've seen. It follows exactly what everyone is saying and we're seeing the results and the stores are seeing the results. But it's really interesting because what we tried to do as a supplier this summer is we tried to get ready for opportunity. We tried to build assets around opportunity. And I heard the word flexibility. And yes, we have to be nimble. We have to be flexible. And we have to be ready to turn if we see opportunities in the marketplace. And when I say opportunities, it's opportunities to support the retailer, our retail base, so the retailers can support the consumer demand. So we built all these assets, anticipating that we would see the summer trends go into the winter. And now it's really we're doing a lot of what I call little business dancing. We're dancing now because we're seeing these opportunities. We're grabbing these assets that we built and we're plugging them into the marketplace. So it's been a real chess game for us. But I think it's something really interesting. I know most of you, or I've met most of you, but I think this industry has a tremendous responsibility this year. I mean, we have to be certain, for example, that there's enough equipment out there for the demand. We have to be certain that it's a safe environment at these cross-country facilities. We have to be certain that everyone comes, when they get done, they have the ultimate experience, so they come back. They come back again, and we get a new customer. To hear that 40% of the people on hiking trails were new customers, wow, I didn't know that. So I think as an industry, we really have to be prepared for this, and we have to really think this through, because this could be the continuation of the growth of cross country for multiple years ahead of us if we do this right. And I sat in a lot of town hall meetings with SIA and a lot of the Alpine resorts, and they're really thinking this through. I mean, there's some lift tickets. You can buy them for $19 on Tuesday afternoon from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock because nobody skis Tuesday afternoon from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And for $19, you can go out there. And people are working from home. They are more flexible. So I think we can't have the traditional way of thinking. or we're just going to get traditional results. And we're not going to have a traditional part of participation. I think what Kelly said is right. We could see 30, 40, 50% more people come to our facility or buy our equipment or go to the retailers. So I think together we really have to work as a group. We have to make sure that we cement something, an experience in to these Nordic skiers' mind, the new ones, mostly the new skiers. So they do come back and they do buy equipment. And we see a 5 or 7 year trend that goes up, and it's not stuck at 4.9, 4.8, 5.1. We want to see 7.5. We want to see 8 million a year. And I think we have that responsibility. So I think as a working group, I think that we should have more calls like this. We should discuss these things as a group and make sure that our product is consistent. And you know, again, as from a supplier standpoint, we're being we have the product. We're trying to be as flexible as possible. And right now, it's just with the demand, we're just trying to ship as much stuff as we can to get it into the stores. So that's the perspective from a supplier standpoint. If you have any questions, let me know.
Great. Steve, thanks. I've got several questions for you, but I want to bring Bruce in now to kind of complete the circle on, you know, as from a rep's perspective. And so Bruce Deal, as I mentioned before, is from the Tyrell Sports Group, representing Salomon and Swix, as well as other products. And Bruce, I'd love to hear from you about what you are hearing and seeing at the retail level in terms of sales, et cetera, and then also touch on a little bit on some of the inventory levels from, you know, from your hard goods, you know, Poles as well as Salomon.
Yeah, sure, Reese. Hey, everybody. Good to see you all again. It would be nice if we could be in person, of course, but it's good to see you all here. This is great. So speaking from on the sales side, this summer was actually really interesting to see how everything tracked and kind of what Steve was getting at earlier. At the earlier part of the year, particularly more on the Alpine side than on the Nordic side, a lot of retailers panicked, frankly, and were questioning their preseason commitments and whether they wanted to have all of it or, you know, some of it or none of it. Or, you know, it was very, there was so much uncertainty out there and so much fear, frankly, that everybody was kind of like, oh, geez, what's going to happen? And it was interesting at that point, we didn't really see that sort of panic in the Nordic retailing world pretty much at all. Which was kind of an interesting thing. And it may just be that people were, you know, thinking that by the time cross-country skiing actually started, it wasn't really going to be as much of an issue. But as the summer went along and things started to ease up as far as people getting out to do stuff, and I know you guys have already talked about the level of participation in cycling and running and hiking and all that stuff, the writing sort of became more clear to a lot of people that were involved, maybe on the Alpine side, that were saying, hey, you know what, as a way to hedge for Alpine skiers who were wondering whether or not there was going to be chairlift time for them to go Alpine skiing, they were starting to think that, well, wait a minute, if there's these people, and, you know, and in here in New England, you know, a lot of these people are weekend skiers, which I know you guys all know about, and they come up the interstates on Friday afternoon to go Alpine skiing. And they were using this whole concept of not being able to get on the chairlift as saying, okay, well, we're coming up anyway, because a lot of them are second homeowners. You know, what are we going to do if we can't get on a chairlift? And the Nordic light bulbs went off with a few Alpine retailers that we deal with in, you know, June, July, August timeframe, where some of the commitments that they were making for what Steve was talking about earlier with, you know, package level Nordic equipment was unprecedented, honestly. Like, for me personally, I've never seen anything like it in my 25 years of experience doing this, on how retail was reacting to what they were seeing going on out there in the world as far as participation in, you know, outdoor sport activities during the summer. So our sales were extremely good in July, August, and September. Like I said, like, unprecedented for me. I'd never seen anything like it before. And what that's done from a an inventory supply level is it's definitely put a lot of pressure on it. And a lot of the product that we typically have available to sell November, December, and January, and through the winter, is definitely going to be challenged for sure. For Salomon, they actually, our commercial director was actually really good and quick to react and rounded up as much additional package level touring product as he could. And we actually are in a fairly decent position as it stands right now. I can't speak for the other major players out there at all, honestly, but I would imagine that for any of that type of product, it's going to be a pretty challenging environment, once skiing gets going, unfortunately.
Bruce, what are you hearing from your retailers? I know there was an article published recently that REI said that their early season cross-country sales were up in the 300 to 400% range. Are you seeing numbers similar to that at your independents around the country or around New England?
Yes, absolutely. That is 100% true. And in some of these more urban areas, specifically where people are typically going to get their alpine ski equipment, and it's happening exactly how some of these retailers anticipated, that people are going in and buying that cross-country equipment as a way to hedge for chairlift time. So, and to Steve's point also, what I think is really exciting for all of us that are involved in this, whether it be on the alpine side or the Nordic side, is that we're going to have so many new people that are coming into this year. And, the weirdness of not being able to use indoor facilities for, putting boots and clothes on and that kind of thing, it's not going to have as much of effect on new people because they don't know what it was, most of them don't know what it was like beforehand. So I think what's, again, to sort of echo Steve's point, we have a great opportunity right now to increase the overall size of the participation in cross-country skiing. In my opinion, I would love to see if we get another, 70 or 80% more people trying it. If we could get 20% of them that are going to say next year, when hopefully this is all over, they're going to keep cross-country skiing in addition to the other things that they're already doing, would be amazing. And sort of a new growth in cross-country skiing that we've maybe never seen before. So it's really exciting to see if this all plays out the way that I hopefully it will. So we'll see how that goes.
You mentioned a couple alpine shops in New England, historically alpine only shops that have purchased significant first time purchases of cross country gear. We've also seen that at several shops around the country. Yep. Have you spoken to them, and do they have any long-term outlook? I mean, are they kind of waiting to see, they want to get in so they don't miss the boat this year, and then they'll see about next year? What are their longer range thoughts, if there are any?
My feeling is that as long as they're making money doing it, they'll keep doing it, Reese. I don't, a lot of these guys, they're trying something out that they haven't done before. And if it works, and if people keep coming back, that's where it definitely won't be as big as it was this year. I wouldn't imagine, but if it works for them and they're making money at it, I would imagine they'll probably keep going.
What we had heard earlier this summer that soft goods sales were pretty lackluster across the board, not just in ski. And this is also for you, Steve, I guess. What are you guys seeing now for soft goods sales? Certainly NPD reported that those numbers were down, not just in our industry, but in many. Are you guys seeing that in cross country also, or not so much?
Go ahead, Steve.
In cross country, we're not. I think a big challenge was this summer when people were filling their stores with alpine clothing equipment. That what do we do? Do we spray the garments now? Do we have to wait 10 hours? Do we need a disinfection room? There were a lot of questions, and I think the nature of the culture within people that want to be outside. especially in the cross country, snowshoe, hiking arena, I think there's a little bit less sensitivity to trying on clothing and worried about the virus. And I think that we're seeing growth in clothing. And yes, REI did come back with some larger reorders because they have seen in some incredible numbers early. So I see that continuing. This, I think it's an area that people will be a bit cautious with, to be honest, a bit cautious with, but I think that we're still going to see significant growth in that category. You agree, Bruce?
Yeah, I do. And you know, and one of the things that I'll say about that, you know, with all these people that are coming out and riding bicycles more, it's amazing how many people I see out on bicycles that are wearing like cotton shorts and t-shirts, and they will eventually, and they'll eventually understand that it's like, okay, this could be a lot more comfortable if I wasn't, you know, if I had the right clothing on. So I think it's I think for sure going to follow it. It's just a matter of time before people start to understand that it's like, okay, there's really great clothing to do this stuff that makes the experience a lot better. But yeah, I think for sure it'll come.
And Steve, Swix is in pretty good position for fill-in orders mid-season or, well, this fall, late this fall? Yeah,
we are. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, we carried a lot of inventory over this spring. And in some areas of with our garments, you have to order a two-year supply. The minimums in China and in other factories, they're very high. So we almost have to make two-year commitments, and it's working out. We had plenty of inventory. Soft goods is actually the category that has the most inventory in our warehouse right now. So yeah, we're in good shape, and you know, a bit lucky.
Bruce, we had a retailer from Aspen on one of our calls, our retail call, many months ago. So it was probably in July, so quite a bit different time. But that retailer was talking about trying on clothes, and their procedure at that point was to take any garment that was tried on and not purchased, to steam it, then disinfect it, and then rest it for 3 days before putting it on the rack. I know from my town here with a ton of people the last couple of weeks, and I asked a few of the storekeepers, I'm like, what do you do when somebody tries it on? And they just put it back on the rack. What are you seeing like recently now, as opposed to back in July, for people at ski shops trying on gear?
You know, I haven't been able to go into too many of them because frankly, they don't want me to come in, which is hurts my feelings. But anyway, but I did, I was in one, and they had this incredible machine that they'd purchased that was a ultraviolet light that mm-hmm. had these big arms that folded up out of the side of the thing. And I kind of joked with them. I'm like, so what are you irradiating everything when after somebody touches it? And this thing actually, when they leave at night, they turn this thing on, and it basically disinfects or irradiates every living thing in that location overnight. And they come back in the morning and turn it off. And I don't know if it actually works or not, but it makes them feel better. And they've got this machine in there that they turn on overnight. It was amazing. But I've also talked to some retailers for people trying on boots specifically, where they'll put some spray of disinfectant down inside the boot after someone's tried it on. You know, and the effectiveness of any of this stuff is questionable, I guess, in my mind. But if it makes people feel more comfortable about trying on clothes and boots and shoes, then perfect.
Steve, you and I had a conversation, I'm not sure when, but a while ago, and you were sharing with me that Swix does have a disinfectant. Have you as a company put out any guidance on how to use some of your disinfectants? I believe you said it was not, it didn't meet some of the specific guidelines for the U.S. because you just didn't bother to, or you didn't think it was necessary to get those. But have you guys put out any guidance along those lines?
We haven't, because we're really not the voice of authority here. And I wanted to be careful. The product that you're referring to is a Toco Universal Fresh. And we got documentation from Switzerland in the laboratory where it was created that it does kill 99.9% of bacteria, bacterial. And also, you know, we found out it kills lice. It kills, I mean, we because people wanted to use it for helmets. But to register a disinfectant in the United States, you have to go through the FDA. It's a long process. So what we didn't go through is Switzerland did not register this as a disinfectant with the FDA. So we had to tap our brakes. Although the product is very good, we can't come out and say it's a disinfectant. Although I just did on the video, but it's, there's guidelines you have to go through. So I thought as a company, we needed to be very careful. We need to follow by the rules and regulations, and be cautious. And, you know, it's interesting because I deal with a lot of legal counsel in Washington, D.C., and they've been inundated with companies who have been trying to, expedite the process, which is about an 18-month process to get a disinfectant approved or in front of the FDA, reviewed and approved, or not allowed. And the attorneys were inundated with people who wanted to push their product through, given what was going on. So it's been a mad rush for the disinfectant category. But to answer your question, no, we did not because of we never registered it with the FDA.
Right. Marcy asked a question. She's a small shop in Montana. And she says that they have been quarantining their garments for 24 hours or just 24 to 48 hours and cleaning their dressing rooms after every customer. They also purchased a large shipment of socks to try on socks specifically for boot fitting, which is a great idea. So thank you, Marcy, for sharing that. We do have a list of FDA approved disinfectants listed on, in the latest news of the Kissel website that talks that coming out of that that rental recap that we did. So those lists are available and out there. We're in the question and answer. So if anybody has any questions regarding kind of suppliers or retailers, please chime in there. If not, I've got a couple more. Bruce, how much impact, if any, is the lack of the consumer shows playing out, do you think, in skiing, both alpine and cross country? I know the show that you go to in Boston is primarily alpine, but yeah. Has that been an issue? Is that, you know,
It's a little early to say because the show is typically now. It's actually this week. Whether or not that's going to have a huge effect on retail within the Metro Boston, Southern New Hampshire, all the way out through Connecticut and Rhode Island, time will tell. What's interesting is to see how consumer purchasing trends have been changing. And a lot of people are using the internet to, kind of locate what it is that they want. And then they're going out and finding it and buying it. And what's been interesting, another thing about that is a lot of shops, and going back to talking about trying on things and boot fitting and whatnot, a lot of shops are doing boot fitting by appointment only. So you'd have to call ahead and say, I'm coming in on, this day, do you have a slot open? And what every single one of them that I've talked to that's doing this has 100% conversion. There's not one that somebody didn't come in and purchase a pair of ski boots from them. So things like that are changing how, kind of how brick and mortar retailing is being done, but where the internet is sort of becoming sort of an assistant to brick and mortar retailing, whether or not the consumer's shopping and then going into a store or calling ahead to the store and doing a curbside type of pickup. The decisions that consumers are making are much more definite when they get to the point of purchasing. So whether it's either in a store or whether online, and just like we were talking about before, where the perceived lack of inventory at retail is driving people to make purchasing decisions more on the spot, I guess, is probably the most accurate way I can say that. So to answer your question, time will tell on whether or not the consumer show or the big one that we have here is going to have some sort of a negative impact or, you know, and or positive impact on ski purchasing. But the retailer in question that supports that BWE show in Boston is actually doing a warehouse sale in his warehouse that's just south of Boston, actually.
Right.
And that's next week. And he actually, the same guy, had one earlier in the year, I think it was in August, and he said it was actually quite good. So, and again, that whole thing with limiting the amount of people on, you know, how many people can be in a store at once, you know, it drives people to make a decision and purchase, because they have this pressure on them to say, if I don't do it now, I'm not going to be able to do it. So, we'll see. I guess is the best way I can answer that question, Reese, is we'll see what happens there as far as whether the show is going to have a positive or negative effect.
And I think you're right. It sounds like the trend is if you're going into a shop, you're going in with a specific mission to buy something. Sounds like there's far less tire kicking. We had a question for Steve from Marcy again, looking for new concise how-tos from Swix in dealing with COVID. And I think she was just asking if you have any new tools available online for retailers that deal with kind of the COVID situation. I know one of the questions that I always get is, how do you sterilize a pole grip? Now, I understand you're probably not going to answer that, which I understand, but that's the question that comes out.
I think that a couple things. Swix has all summer long, we've been working on what we call a certification program. It came from another project that it was more of a coincidence that nobody knew what PPE was. There's the three letters nobody knew before March 1. It was foreign. Now it's common language. And this summer we worked on a PPE certification program. And what that is it's a full 12-minute video on the proper protection wax technicians or shop employees should be taken when they're waxing. And this is just not around fluorocarbons. It's just not around racing. So we have that coming out in a couple weeks. It will be the certification program. It will actually be on the USSA website as part of a course that coaches have to take, in particular coaches, because they're waxing multiple skis for multiple kids weekly, that they have to take so they understand personal protection and the necessary steps they have to take. So, you know, we built that. As far as the sanitation of the product itself, we have not put anything out there because of what I said earlier.
Okay, I assume that. Thank you. Hopefully, Marcy, that answers your question. One other question, Steve. How are you forecasting the 21-22 season? I know we're getting into that time where, you know, as Kelly has often said to me, this year is totally different than every other year, and any of the historical data that we have probably is not relevant this year and may not be going forward. What are you thinking for you know, the buying season for the following year?
Well, your question is very timely. I just did a 3-year forecast for Norway. So, it's by category. And we're expecting to see the increases that we're seeing this fall to continue. It's interesting, you know, the disruption of business for us as a supplier. We're actually only about, even with the COVID virus hitting and taking away, I'd say 25% of the ski season in March, especially out west where it's a longer season, we're only about 6% off in sales. And we expect to come back on that number And we expect to actually be up almost 10% by the end of the year. We see that trend continuing. And what we'll look at now is we'll look at areas within certain product groups. We believe it's going to be recreational driven for product, meaning not necessarily race will be stable. Race will continue. Races will be limited this year. We know that by the number of races, the late season starts, and the number of participants allowed in each race. So we know that for Alpine already in cross country, but we really focusing on the recreational side of our business. And how do we have product that is more, it's just with less barriers, where you can just spray on some wax in about a minute and you don't need a manual. You know, it's intuitive to put the pole strap, to go put your hand through the pole strap, not down. Certain things we look at when we're addressing this market. So we are, answer your question, we are forecasting increases for the next 3 years. We're forecasting increases in the recreational category. We think race will be stabilized, will stabilize itself, and be as solid as it always is for us as a brand. But we really believe that the new user group is going to be where the growth is for us. And it's interesting, we did a poster and we decided to distribute it to our sales reps a couple, maybe 3 weeks ago. And it was, the poster was, new at cross country skiing, here's a checklist. So the poster went on the wall. So people who walked into the shop, if they wasn't a salesperson or they were afraid to ask, they could look on the wall to say, okay, you need decent gloves. You really shouldn't be using Alpine gloves for cross country. You need something called a base layer, something close to your skin. You need a jacket. You know, blue jeans may not be the best solution. So we did like a consumer checklist for the beginner participant to even lower the barriers even more, so they felt more comfortable walking into a shop and maybe taking a look at that poster and saying, okay, this, I have this, I have this, I have this. Maybe I should pick up some gloves or another hat or something. So, you know, we tried to build these assets this summer to support retail and make it easier for retailers and easier for the end consumers.
Awesome. We have a couple questions here. One is Sally Jones asking if you can get that Swix poster, and maybe you could let me know how I can send that out to people or send out a link of how to get to it, and also the Wax Tech PPE video. So just to wrap up, I've just got so many questions for you guys. But Swix, you guys have created this Tavern Stretch denim piece. I just got an email on that today, but you know, this kind of very street oriented, very recreational looking, so kind of non-race, non-tight, yet functional. How, and I know Fisher has that urban boot that's similar. How is that being received? I mean, to me, it seems like there's an opportunity there, especially with this new group of people coming in who don't want to look like a racer because they don't identify with a racer, but they still want the functional product and they know they're going to be in it for multiple hours. To either one of you, how has that been retailing or selling into retail, and you know, just your thoughts on that kind of category?
Well, I can talk about the first part, and then Bruce, you can talk about the retail part. It's interesting because I had an interview with the Wall Street Journal about this anticipated spike in cross-country skiing. And they asked about clothing, and I told them about the tavern pant. And I told him about Trails to Cocktails, and he loved it. He was like, oh my gosh, that's incredible. By the way, I didn't make that up. One of my sales reps made that up, Trails to Cocktails.
But it wasn't me.
Bruce or Polly.
What I said was, if you look at a cross-country trail, it's nature's natural way of social distancing because you're 6 feet apart, two tracks. And I think that, you know, you can go out and ski next to someone and be over 6 to 8 feet apart. It's nature's normal way of social distancing and get some exercise. So Then he got all technical about track setting, and I didn't know much about that. But he really was interested in this. So yes, we designed a blue jean. Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong. It's got lycra in it. 4-way stretch, fleece line, big pockets, kind of a relaxed fit. Because then you can go cross country skiing for your 3.5K, which is probably the average recreational skier skis 3.5 to 5Ks, and then go have a coffee and be comfortable with it.
There it is.
So has it been a big hit? It got a lot of attention in the spring. It's getting a heck of a lot more attention right now. People are picking up on it because it's a functional garment that's very extremely comfortable, warm, and you don't have to have this athletic build to wear it or to look good in it. It's the timing has been pretty good for that particular pant.
And Bruce, the retail side of that, does the customer understand it?
Well, you know, this is one of those things that our apparel lady, who we love dearly, every once in a while will come along with something that is it's just so different. And for a lot of, I'll give you an example on another piece here. But for a lot of retailers, when they see something like that, they're like, "Are you out of your mind?" that sort of a response. But it's such a cool thing that it takes a little bit of time for things like that to sort of catch on. But a couple of the more progressive shops that have said, "Yeah, you know what, we could show this thing," they're probably going to have, I think, pretty good success with it. But there, we have another piece that we brought out last year. That's it's almost like a dress. It's long. It's about almost knee length, and it has like a zip that comes up the side of the neck, not straight up the front. And it's a very unusual piece. And I have one of my customers that bought into it this year. And I was actually on the phone with our apparel lady this morning, begging her to try to get me some more of them, because this woman's calling me every day, like, "Did you get more tunics in? Did you get more tunics in?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's killing me." But it again was one of those pieces that it's so different that people will look at something like that and be like, "Yeah, that makes sense." You know, it's like the same thing when the insulated skirts first came out. At first, people were like, "What? Are you crazy?" And then now, like, every woman that cross-country skis, I shouldn't say everyone, but most women that cross-country ski have those skirts. They love them, you know? So I think the thing with the jeans, it's a great idea. I love it. If I'd known you were going to talk about them, I would have put mine on. Even someone with a not-so-athletic build. They work great. I love them. I'm going to ski in mine all the time. I can't wait.
Awesome. All right, we ran a little over. I know both you guys have to get back to other meetings. So thank you very much, Bruce and Andrew. Steve. We did one question. Is that video available, the Swix video available in Canada? Or the poster and video available in Canada?
We can make it available in Canada, okay. Yes. We could do that. I can send the files to my Canadian Swix supplier, and we will do that. So, yes, I will be okay. I'll be sure to do that, and then the Canadian distributor will have all the assets that we build here.
Okay, great. And Hugo, if you have any issues there, get in touch with me, and I can facilitate. Yeah. All right. Bruce and Steve, thank you very much. Appreciate your time this afternoon. Always good to see both of you. And so we're at 2:09, a little bit beyond our time. I apologize for that, but this was super interesting and I had to ask my questions. So let's take a 5-minute break. We'll reconvene at 2:15. Please don't connect unless you feel you need to. Remember, the silent auction is out there. I'll post that link again, but there's some great items, including a YTS lightweight track setter that you definitely don't want to miss. That's it. We'll see you back here at 2:15. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, let's reconvene. Of course, now we go to break. You can't really tell if anyone's come back or not. So it's a little different. I just re-put the silent auction link in the chat. So please, if you are please go there and buy something. How's that? There's some great items there, though. So definitely check it out. So we are going to key takeaways from our COVID Zoom calls next. As many of you know, Kissa ran biweekly calls, I think since April. We've had 12 of them so far. We've got the next one scheduled for December 9th, I believe, and then we'll continue into January once ski areas are open, really kind of started to discuss what the reality is based on what we had had thought it would be. But the recaps of those 12 calls are on the CISA website, the ccsaa.org, the industry site. They're all listed there in the latest news, so feel free to check them out. We have an audio for all of them as well as some text notes that I took. My text notes are not that good, but you get the idea. And there's some good links there also. But we wanted to recap a couple of the key takeaways, and we're going to start with tickets and rentals. We loop those together just because kind of tickets, rentals, and retail all kind of work together. As we figured, most ski areas have those that one desk cover those categories. So we'll start with Richard Hodges from White Pine to share a little bit about what White Pine is doing this winter in for those categories. Richard.
All right. Thanks, Reese. And first off, I'd like to remind everybody that this is your big opportunity to ask questions. We've been talking and working on this for 6 months now. We've circled back around on all of the topics, or almost all the topics now. And so it's a huge opportunity to ping things off of us right here before the season. So really quickly on tickets and retail, we've talked a lot about how to do physical, day pass sales and things like that. And for us at White Pine, it's plexiglass at the cash register, but we're trying to find that kind of delicate balance between minimizing touch points with our customers, but still making sure they're coming in the shop to look at all the fancy retail things that they can buy. A lot of operations have moved to a kind of a walk-up external window for their day tickets. But for us, as a very strong retailer, as well as the Nordic Center, we're trying to find that balance of making sure that we're providing kind of that quality customer interaction, but minimizing the number of touch points for those tickets. In terms of retail, we've reconfigured the shop. And the one important thing that we've done, and we're doing a final one next week, is a walkthrough with our employees to look at the flow through the store so that, a customer comes in and says, okay, imagine you are a first-time skier. What do you need to know coming in? Where do you need to go? Where do you not need to go? And how can we get you outside quickly? And so we're trying to set up our customer flow and our store flow so that we still see everybody, but we interact with them at a kind of a lighter level. In terms of employee health, that's our number one priority too. So anybody that's dealing, we're all masks, statewide mask mandate now, but cleaning, hygiene, and making a safe environment, but making sure that we see that customer when they come in the door. So that's been our focus right now. I know there have been moves for online tickets and online day ticket sales and things like that. And we've kind of fallen down on we'd really like to see you come in and hand you an old school ticket and say hello through a mask before we gently escort you out the door. So.
And Richard, this was a conversation. Our very first Zoom call back in April was about ticket sales and what would we do. And that was back when everyone was clamoring to go touchless and looking at kind of any kind of system that would create that. And the conversations we had as a group around those included the fact that we don't have, very few of our ski areas have a gated entrance like Alpine does. And so Alpine, absolutely everybody who gets on a chairlift has to go through a gate. So it's very, very controlled. We don't have that in cross country. Many of our ski areas have multiple access points, different parking lots, satellite areas, as well as just this breadth of space where people can go from the parking lot to the trails. So that didn't really work. And I know, for years, I get the question is, do we have a different solution to the paper ticket and wicket? And we ultimately don't because ticket checkers like to see that because then they don't have to ask for the ticket. Whereas if that ticket was a receipt on your phone, the ticket checker would have to ask, do you guys at White Pine have ticket checkers at all? Is that an issue?
Yeah, we have ticket checkers, and we're going to do a lot more of it this year. But that was one of the driving decisions on not going to online day pass sales. Is if we're out on the trail checking tickets, you know, if somebody's displaying a traditional ticket or their season pass, it's super easy. You don't even have to stop them. You can just say hello. But if they're not, the process of, okay, pull up your phone, show me your receipt. You know, when it's 15 degrees and maybe not quite gorgeous out, we decided that was not an optimum solution for us, because, you know, people fumbling with their phone, with their gloves to prove that they bought a day pass probably is not the most customer friendly way to deal with that. And, you know, with multiple trail accesses and things like that, we are beefing up ski patrol for various reasons this year, because we're expecting much larger crowds and also for checking passes. But it's so much easier to just visually check a pass that we didn't think that it was worth going that direction. Maybe somebody else has a different opinion on that, but that's kind of where we fell down on it in terms of, you know, customer interface.
Yeah, I think that was pretty consistent. I want to go to Mike Hussey now from Reichert. Mike, I hope you're there. You have a different plan than what Richard has, and I think a lot of that is coming down from the college there that owns your various resorts. But can you tell us a little bit about your plan this year for tickets and getting kind of access to on-site, to your on-site property?
Yeah, absolutely. We're in Vermont, which is an extremely conservative state. In fact, the governor just took away our cross-state border map and has replaced it with everybody coming into the state must quarantine. So the no green zones, red zones, yellow zones anymore. Basically, everybody outside of Vermont is a red zone. So that's the world we're living in. The ski area is owned by Middlebury College, which is also probably even more conservative than the state of Vermont. So it's an interesting world that we live in here. So what we're doing is we work with Liftopia, and anybody purchasing any product from us, meaning a ticket, a season's pass, a rental, or a lesson, will buy online before they arrive, and they'll get a reservation, and the reservation will be checked at the entrance to the parking lot. Now it's an imperfect system because, like everybody else, we've got a zillion different points of entry, but we have sort of one main parking lot, and one main place to enter. And what's likely to, this is my favorite term right now, is likely to. What's likely to happen is that we will give those people that come through the gate at the gatehouse, as it were, a ticket, a day ticket for the day, and that would be your season's pass holder or your general day ticket. And the reasoning behind all this is strictly contact tracing. We need to have contact tracing for everybody that's on property. So that for us is the simplest way to do it. It will be imperfect because people will park other places and try to get on the trail system. But at least we'll know those people that had a ticket on their body. We have ambassadors out on the trail. They'll be able to identify those people, and those that don't have tickets, they can encourage to either go get a ticket or to wrap up their day and go home, which isn't great customer service, but that's, again, kind of the world that we're living in right now.
And I put in the chat, I was asking if anyone else is going reservation only. I'd love to hear from anyone else that is doing that. And Richard, you mentioned that your people will be coming through the lodge. Again, this was that discussion we had for the retail side, is many ski areas were apprehensive to go online sales only, or at least, or even create a large online sale element where their receipt was their ticket, because it also was going to impact their retail sales. And I think retail sales for you is quite an important part. Is that true?
Yes, retail sales are well north of $500,000 in our shop every year, and we're expecting even more this year. And it, for us, it's really important to have people walk through the shop. The way we're spacing things out, it will be a smoother flow, but it's really hard to make an impulse purchase if you never go in the shop. and we're doing some things. We're looking at like late afternoon appointments for people purchasing equipment who may need more time or need more attention in their purchase, to kind of set up late afternoon appointments when things slow down, so that we can, you know, spend quality time with the customers, and really, you know, get the, there are some people that need to try on 5 different ski boots, you know, there's just no getting around it. And for those people, we're going to encourage them to make a reservation with us so that we can spend the time with them when it's not quite so busy.
Got it. Awesome. I did, it's Sally from Tahoe Donner did say that they will be doing mostly online sales also, or reservation also. And Gunnar from Dartmouth says we're doing online with pickup or in-person sales through a ticket window here at Dartmouth. And I think, Gunnar, I don't know if you guys do much in the way of retail, so that may not be an issue. Let's move on to Nick Mahood from Woodstock Nordic and discuss the rentals. And this has been a category that we've just spent many calls on this summer, many Zoom calls as well as countless other calls. And it's been very interesting listening to the Alpine calls on rentals also. Nick, you're changing your procedure this year from what you've done in the past. Can you tell us a little bit about that for this year?
Sure, Reese. Thanks. So we've made some pretty substantial changes here. Woodstock Nordic is also in Vermont, so we're dealing with some pretty strict travel regulations as well. We have expanded our footprint considerably within the building that we occupy. Previous to this, we are kind of pigeonholed into probably a little over 200 square feet. We've about tripled that space available to us this year by expanding upstairs into the ballroom area of the building. So as far as capacity goes, we can have up to 75 people in the entire building, which I think we can flow through nicely. Specific to rental, we moved out of probably like a 50 square foot area where we were, you know, it was shoulder to shoulder on a busy Saturday. We are going to spread our rental process out between the two floors. So for guests that need to purchase a day ticket and rentals, that will happen on the second floor. They're going to start the process by being fitted for their boots upstairs here. Once they're fitted and ready, they can drop off their street shoes in an adjoining room before they head downstairs and outside. The rest of the rental process is going to take place outside. So we'll stage skis and poles and snowshoes outside daily, probably kind of based on how many visitors we think we're going to have. That the rest of the rental process, fitting and whatnot, will happen outside. And then on the return, it's going to kind of be exactly the opposite of that. They'll drop them back off. The equipment will be sanitized, and then they'll go back inside to return their boots.
Have you, it sounds like a great system, and I know there was an alpine ski area up in Canada that began a pickup for skis and poles outside 2 years ago, 2 years pre-COVID, and they say it works great for them. Another benefit there is that when that that customer finally gets all their equipment, what the Alpine area found is that many times the customer had to make one more stop, be it go to the bathroom, get something to eat, make a phone call before they got to snow. So having them pick up their equipment right before they got on snow facilitated that. You also, Nick, have another satellite operation that is new this year. It sounds like it was coming regardless of COVID anyway. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's kind of an interesting process for rentals.
Sure. So our Nordic Center is at our, the country club in the summer. And we're about half a mile away from the main resort where the hotel is. And then we have a few other satellite operations. We have a athletic club facility with indoor swimming and tennis, and we have a downhill ski area. And one of the pieces that was challenging for us was to really interact with the in-guests. So we opened up kind of an outdoor activity center right at the main in block, which we are going to utilize. And Reese is correct, that was coming before COVID. We're going to utilize that space to try to interact with in-guests and kind of head them off, or at least get them familiar with what the process is going to be before they come over to the Nordic Center. We also groom a totally separate trail network on the other side of the village. So we'll be able to service those guests' needs by renting them equipment and getting them a day pass and even shuttling them to the second site without them ever having to go into the Nordic Center building. Just quickly to touch on one of Reese's other points, though, we are going to distribute our retail operations between the Outdoor Activity Center at the Inn, our first and second floors here at the Nordic Center, because I think, as everyone's pretty much alluded to, you don't want to lose out on those impulse buy purchases. So things that we normally see as potentially impulse buy, hats, gloves, sunglasses, and other sundries will be readily available at all three locations.
A quick question, Nick, on your rental fleet. Did you increase that this year to accommodate a couple different locations, or how will you manage that piece?
No, a lot of this has fallen into place before some of these multiple locations were kind of thought through and decided upon. We did add a bunch of skis into our preseason rental fleet purchasing prior to this, just because we wanted to fill some holes in sizes. So I'm hopeful we'll be able to maneuver the fleet around that we can manage the multiple locations efficiently and effectively.
Got it. Okay. Thanks very much for that. Very interesting. Certainly the creative ideas that we've all been forced to come up with since COVID have been fascinating. Let's move on to events. Certainly this was one of the operational areas that was virtually eliminated due to the coronavirus. I know Harwood up in Canada had many events planned for the summer, and that hurt them dramatically. I know that happened in many other ski areas. Having said that, many ski areas were able to host successful events over the summer, including Crested Butte, that ran an endurance trail running and mountain bike event that they normally do. They worked that out. And I know the Berkey has run, I believe, 1,000-person mountain bike race this summer, and they are planning on in-person racing for the Berkey this year. Richard, can you discuss, I know you run a couple events, more local events over a couple different townships in Park City and the surrounding area. Can you tell us a little bit about how what your plan is for this year? I think it may have changed dramatically yesterday.
But as of 9:30 Sunday evening, there are no events.
For 2 weeks or four?
For 2 weeks and to be determined after that. Groupings of any sort are actually not entirely prohibited, but highly looked down upon, and the governor has authorized law enforcement agencies to actually cite groups that have formed for social gatherings that are not immediate family, and they're discouraging immediate family gatherings. It's a 2-week lockdown, right? Not a lockdown, not a lock in, but a 2-week cooling off period because our hospitals are full. Whether that works remains to be seen. And as it stands right now, we've got several regional races on the docket for, USSS races on the docket for January. And we'll see how it goes. We have NCAA races on the docket. And we're just going to play it by ear. We've put deadlines out in terms of refunds and things like that. For the local race series, for the citizens race series, it's kind of wait and see. We've created the capability of everybody being able to do it virtually on the sites, on their own time, within a window around the original scheduled race date. But we'll see. Our original plan was to do small groupings of wave starts or intervals or individual interval starts at those races. And that's still in place, but subject to change without warning.
Yeah. Interestingly, it is a moving target right now, and things are changing. I know Nensa just ran a roller ski race that had about 100 competitors. It was individual start, but four laps of their 3.2K loop. So there was definitely a fair number of people on the track, but that seemed to work well.
That's also affecting our lesson plans for group lessons. So we're basically converting right now, if it stands how it stands, everything will be a private lesson or a family pod lesson. There will be no public group lessons.
Let's hold on lessons until we get to that section here, because I know I'll have some comments there. But I was going to say the Boulder Mountain Tour has partnered with KISSA this year. They're going virtual entirely, and they are going to designate many of our ski areas as kind of official trails to do your race. So I think that's a good thing. It sounds like the summer seemed to be okay, and now we're coming into that hot time of year where things are not going well with COVID. So things are changing, and especially I think that event section is going to be challenging. Let's keep moving here and go to food and beverage. And Sally from Tahoe Donner, they have a beautiful lodge that I know right now their Instagram is putting out pictures of the food that they're preparing. So I drool every night as I see that and know that I can't have it. But their lodge, actually, if you go to the KISSA industry or the consumer homepage, it's that picture towards the bottom of a beautiful ski lodge. But anyway, Sally, what are you guys doing with food? Because I know that has been a pretty significant revenue stream for Tahoe Donner.
Yeah, we are kind of sacrificing some of our food revenue, we feel, for the sake of being as safe as we possibly can. It really does make me nervous to have people dining inside, which is currently allowed in California. But we're saying once we open for skiing, there'll be no indoor dining. We're shifting our menu to be grab and go versus we normally do a made to order, hot food and salads, etc. So we're just going to go, we're still going to do soups and salads and sandwiches, but it'll all be ready made, still on site. So it'll be homemade, healthy, etc. But a customer will be allowed to come into the lodge, wait in line inside of the lodge. They'll purchase their food and exit with that food and either take it home, eat it on the patio, take it back to their cars, etc. So again, I think we're going to lose some sales, but in the big picture, that feels a much better bet than losing a staff or a ski area because we get sick. So yeah, that's pretty much the plan. Any other questions there, Reese?
That was it. What, do you know what your menu is going to be? Like, what are those grab and go items?
Yeah, soups and chili. Those are kind of some of our best sellers anyway in the winter. So we'll just have big hot pots full of that ready to go. A couple of wraps, a couple of sandwiches, a couple of burritos. And we've invested in one of those hot cabinets so we can keep, we can make stuff in the kitchen, bring it out and keep it hot next to the servers. So it can be really fast, pay money and get out. Cookies, Clif Bar type stuff, hot cocoa, the normal tea coffee. We're not going to do our normal draft beer, but we are going to be selling beer and wine out of our cooler so that we can still satisfy that need for those that like a beer or a glass of wine after they've skied.
Awesome. Awesome. I just put in the chat the link to a recap from the food and beverage Zoom call. And that had a lot of – we had an architect on that ski area architect that spoke a lot about different ideas. It was really quite interesting. A question from Nate for Sally also, are you taking all of your seating outside? So there's no seating inside. All of it will be out in the deck?
Correct, yeah. No, we're only letting customers in to purchase and pick up food and to go through the building to pick up their rental equipment that they will have prepaid. And then we're isolating one set of bathrooms at one end of the building that customers will be allowed into those restrooms. The other side will be for employees. And then we'll pop porta potties around to make sure there's enough of those facilities around. But we are doing our best to keep the customers out as much as possible or coming through as fast as possible. So we're not breathing anything they're breathing.
Gotcha. Thank you, Sally. I think that's that answers our question there. Nick Mahood, I think you're still on. I hope you're there. Just a question from Marcy on rental shops and how you're sanitizing. Have you guys spent time really figuring out how you're going to sanitize your gear? I know the suppliers really aren't saying much. We have discussed this on a couple calls, but have you kind of gone any further with that?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to stay with the same protocol that we used over the summer for our mountain bike operations. So once a bike and the helmet come back, we have, it's called Clear Gear. It's sprayed onto all of the surfaces. Essentially, it's sprayed onto the more or less the entire bike, and then sprayed onto the helmet, particularly like touch points, where people would really touch the helmet repeatedly to get it on and off, etc. So we'll follow, and then that gear is, to the best we can, that gear is taken out of circulation for the rest of the day, particularly the helmets. That's going to perhaps be a little more challenging over the winter, but we'll follow the same procedure with spraying everything down, the surfaces down. Like I said, during the day, the rental equipment minus the boots is going to live outside. So I think, you know, between spraying it down and being outside in the cold, I'm not concerned with turning that equipment over repeatedly throughout the day.
Gotcha. Thank you. And Richard, you have a plan for your equipment, specifically poles?
I just typed a little note in the discussion. We've identified the pole straps as kind of being the key touch point for customers. And, you know, the strategy in talking with some of our public health people, you know, is spraying with sanitizer before and after every use. There's less risk associated with the skis themselves and with the boots, unless people are perhaps becoming very intimate with their boots or skis on the trail. And so that was identified as a key area for us to kind of keep things clean and sanitized. And we will be distributing and dropping off equipment, rental equipment out of doors and dealing with them, you know, as pieces come in, spray them down. As pieces go out, spray them down.
Gotcha. And we had a question from Nate about showers. Richard, I'm assuming you guys probably have showers in your area there. I know Nick does.
Thank goodness, no. we the hotel that we cohabitate with has a restroom, and they've upped their cleaning regimen tremendously, and will continue to do that through the winter. But we don't have showers, and that's I'm quite pleased with that right now.
Right. So, Nick, I know you guys do. Are they going to be closed down? What's your thought there?
Showers will be closed down for the season. Locker room can be used to change, but we're not going to allow people to store stuff in the lockers as we have in the past.
Okay. And it sounds like Tahoe Donner, same thing. Let's move on to lessons, because that is always a good topic. And I'm pleased to say that we have Greg Rhodes, PSA Nordic Demo Team member here. We had an entire call devoted to lessons, and that is also on the website. But I'm going to put the link to the PSIA document that was shared there in the chat. It's there now. Greg and Emily and Nick Heron went through the entire document. We're not going to do that here, but Greg, if you can top line kind of what you're seeing and specifically if you've learned anything new since that call. I know it was only a few weeks ago, but the entire country is getting redder and redder. So wondering what, if anything has changed since we spoke before. You put it up there too.
Yeah, I put it up there too. Yeah. No, nothing's really changed. I mean, the biggest thing that I've seen, and it's already been echoed here, more and more Nordic centers are having to go to private lessons only or, house pod lessons. So I think that's going to be the biggest kind of movement that we see. I'd also say that there is, I don't know exactly where it is, so I can't find it quickly, but we did do a little series over the summer around teaching family groups and how to teach a family as a group. So that might be another resource that people might want to look towards of how to manage a, mom and dad and a young child all taking a lesson together, if that's where we're going to go. But really everything that's highlighted in there and what we see as an opportunity is really working on that communication skills of both your teaching as well as your people skills of just keeping the communication going and getting creative with some of the language that you put out there. And it just kind of starting thinking through all of it. And what we've done with NPSIA for our membership is we have more and more clinics, and we'll put more of them out there about really working on your cues and you're using your language more effectively going forward. So that's kind of on the teaching side of it, of using external cues and talking about how you are going to work with your staff to help them be more effective at giving that language that gets people to be effective on learning how to cross-country ski. And then I got on the people skills of just being welcoming and personable. I mean, we're all going to have face coverings up. So learning how to smile with our eyes and having that friendly communication all the time with your guests, just making sure they feel welcome, it's going to lead to a better learning environment when they actually learn how to ski.
Greg, let me rephrase that. This is certainly going to be an interesting year for many reasons. One, right now COVID is exploding, and that's creating issues and starting to creep a few people out. But also we've got this new group of potential skiers coming in, those that really need a lesson this year, more so than ever. Steve from Swix was talking about how we are naturally social distance, not only because of our skis, but because of the way tracks are set, that there is natural distance. What would you say to, what are your thoughts on, or what would you say to a skier that is thinking of cutting back lessons as opposed to trying to beef them up, but in a safe and socially distant way?
Personally, I mean, this is me personally, I would say that's the wrong direction to go. I understand if it's a safety concern, but like we've seen is this is an opportunity to get more people involved. And I think I would just start getting creative with how to service those customers. If it's not a one-on-one lesson, if it's sharing opportunities of creating stations around a teaching area that you normally would do lessons. If you don't feel comfortable putting out that interpersonal interaction, getting creative and saying, hey, we're going to have stages with either QR codes to a video. And I've shared a couple of videos when people asked about putting on skis, but there's a couple other videos that I've put out there. And if people contact me, we can try to see if we can do those things. But QR codes of like, hey, this is my one drill you might want to try here. That is still servicing those people and still giving them an education opportunity to get an experience that might not fit into that one-on-one or private lesson. So I would encourage people to do it. We're going to have to get creative on hiring and meeting people. We're all going to have a direct to snow meeting activity now. I think less and less indoors. All the rental equipment and the retail stuff is really great and keeping them coming through. But lessons, once they're out on the snow, I would say all lessons and instructors should meet everybody out on snow. And just communicating to people that it is safe to come to a lesson because we are naturally social distance and what we're going to do. So beefing it up. I mean, I remember Richard was on that call when we first talked about it. On he was talking about pre-sales are selling out. And I think hopefully that's still going forward for him. That's an example I use when I talk to Nordic centers of like, we need to beef up our opportunities to teach more lessons.
Yeah. Richard, you had, you're not going to like this. you had said back on I think a call or to me directly, I think it was on one of our Zoom calls, that you don't ever want to, you don't want to be in a position where you have to turn away a lesson this year. What are your thoughts now? And granted, you're in a world of hurt for the next 2 weeks, and hopefully we'll come out of that well. So assuming things start to track a little better, what are your thoughts?
So I've brought on 5 new experienced instructors already this year. So I'm going to have 17 instructors working. And it's the idea is we're going to, you know, rather than do our 9:15 group classic lesson, we're going to end up doing, you know, 3 small privates instead of 1 large group. That's where it stands right now. I mean, that could change over the course of the year, but I've got it. I'm going to schedule extra instructors every single day to help deal with it, especially through the holidays. And I've also got some other people kind of on call who I've done their hiring work for, who may come in, you know, 2 or 3 times a week during the holidays as needed, and also as backup just in case somebody gets ill or somebody's family member gets ill. So I've tried to take the steps necessary to beef up the instructor staff in preparation for that.
Awesome. And, you know, one of the things Steve Poulin mentioned earlier was that we have an incredible opportunity this year, which I think we do. And, you know, an opportunity like this we haven't seen since the 70s when waxless skis came out for the first time. And so looking at how do we provide a great experience and how do we service our guests in all the things they need. And I think lessons are a big part of that. Okay, terrific. I don't see any other questions. We kind of hit a lot there. I did put a few links to the recaps. All of the audio from all of the Zoom calls that we've had are on the website. You might have to poke around a little bit to find the one you're looking for, but certainly if you've got any issues, let me know and I can help you with that. We're running a little behind, but luckily we're coming up to the most boring part of the presentation, our COVID document review. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time here, but I will get into this and then we'll finish that up with a quick break and then our final hour. So KISS has been working on providing guidance to our ski areas on operating protocols for this season. Obviously, with COVID, things are quite a bit different. But, you know, the key thing is we've got all these plans laid out, but we're really not going to know what happens until the doors open and we see who shows up day one and every other day after that. So there's a lot still up in the air. I remember this summer The big question was what was going to happen with back to school? What was going to happen with the holiday weekends over the summer? You know, we went through that. It's like, okay, now we're into what's going to happen when the snow flies and we actually open. And we don't really know at this point. What we've done is created documents that talk about various different best practices. So the documents that we've prepared have had input from not only the CDC, but we've worked closely with NSAA and the many state associations. Most of what's included here, I assume you've already heard already. Nothing is revolutionary, but it can help provide a roadmap for you. And I know one of the potential issues is it safe to cross-country ski? And that could be a question coming from your local health department because they don't know anything about it. So we do have a document that addresses that. Please remember that your local health department has the final word. You know, it's national, you know, the federal or the Canadian provinces, you know, your states, and then your local health department if you have one. So it's very important that that you check in with them. There are also several states that require any ski area or actually any business that's opening that it files some form of operating procedures or something with them. So I would make sure that you check with your state or province to find out what their requirements are. So I'm going to share this first document, operating best practices. These will be on the website by Thursday, so I don't have them posted yet, but they will be up there. And again, it's a relatively simple document. This is something that you could provide to your community, to any kind of concerned entity within your within your local area. It talks a little bit about the Cross Country Skiers Association. We're trying to showcase that we actually know a little bit about what we're talking about. Goes into safety first, you know, how concerned you are about safety. If you know, if you have seen the NSA document, it looks very much like that. A little bit about the industry, how many participants, what the activity is like. Quick note from me talking about how we've done everything we can. And then it goes into a little bit about why cross-country skiing. And this was interesting specifically because in March when many businesses were shut down, Crested Butte and a few others, I believe, you know, applied for a necessary business waiver necessary business. And they were granted that due to the mental and physical well-being, benefits of cross-country skiing. So that was really, I thought, an interesting thing and something to always keep in mind. And we do differ from many other activities in that respect, including alpine and certainly anything inside. Golf was also one that did well there. Then we go into keeping guests safe. Simple, again, it's face coverings, physical distance, cleaning and disinfecting, and then changes to any operational plans. We talk a little bit about the communication of your plan to your guests. We did do a COVID round table specifically on communications, talking about what you should tell them, how you should tell them, how often, et cetera. Again, that audio is on the website. And then a little bit about COVID reporting. Because there are specific reporting criteria. We talk about keeping our employees safe as well as our guests. tests to make sure that, you know, whatever you're doing for tests, whatever's required, some are requiring temperatures being taken, others are requiring that you ask them questions, some are not requiring anything, and then the board of directors. So that's a very brief view of that document. Like I said, it will be on the website in the next 2 days. And then our next document, I think it's this one, is our operating kind of a guide to operations. Again, this is a lot of regurgitated information from everybody else, but it does give you a pretty clear roadmap. It does talk both U.S. and Canada, so I know we have some Canadian members on the call today. I don't understand the Canadian system quite as well, but it does list a lot of resources. And then it goes into some basic ski area operations, employee protection, consumer protection, or customer protection. And then we go into some specific operations for ski areas, indoor, outdoor areas. Again, it's most of what you've seen everywhere else, but it does bring in a little more specifics for many. Talks about tickets, talks about ski school coaching, competitions, rentals. The retail, food service, and lodging, I pretty much defer to those, to their own associations, as they've got pretty comprehensive information that they're following. So that's those are the two documents that we're putting out. Like I said, I wish there was some just amazing information in here that would revolutionize everything, but unfortunately, that is not the case. I will send, when those are posted, I will send a link to where those are on the website. Hopefully you'll get that by Thursday. If not, definitely let me know. Any questions on that quickly? I kind of missed the chat here, so I'm not sure what's in there. And if not, we are at 3:01, so we've got a quick, another 5-minute break. And then we will get into our new research initiative. Remember the silent auction. Every dollar we raise there helps KISSA stay in business. So we appreciate your help there. And special thanks to Yellowstone Track System again for sponsoring this event. And they have a great light track setter in that silent auction. So great thing. All right, let's 3:01. So let's go at 3:06 and we'll get right back to Kelly. Thank you.
this. I left everything.
Hey, Reese. Can we do a sound check on Scotty and George?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
That works.
All right, we're good to go.
All right. All right, I got one more minute, and then we're going to start with Kelly. All right, we're at 3:06. Why don't we go? we've already met Kelly from her previous presentation, but I'd like to remind you that Kelly has served as a consultant to KISSA for the past 3 years, and certainly we appreciate that. And now together with KISSA, she is working with us to create a comprehensive cross-country ski research initiative so that our industry can have the tools and understanding to make better business decisions. We have not, as an industry, had the best research because we've always been tagged on to some form of alpine program. And so this is really, I think, a super exciting time for cross country. And I will let Kelly take it away.
All right. Thanks, Reese. Do you have that one slide?
I do. I will put it up.
Yeah, I'm not sure this is critical. What I'm trying to do is create a clear view of what's going on in the cross-country ski market. And the first piece is consumer. We don't have a lot of consumer data. And our idea, as I've discussed with Reese at length, is to build a consumer panel. And we're working with the Berkey, we're working with REI and several others to create a panel. We want to survey consumers about once per month during the season, beginning on December 1st, just to see what they're seeing, what their perceptions are, you know, how COVID is. Actually, we're seeing your emails right now, Reese.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. To find out what their perceptions of the market are, you know, have they bought equipment? Are they planning on buying equipment? Are they participating? Are they participating more or less? Are they bringing friends? So we want to just get the consumer perspective using that panel. We're also starting a retail panel, and we've chosen several key retailers to survey once a month, and those results will be available approximately a week after we close the survey. So about mid-month every month, you'll be getting the results of that. And it's not going to be an MPD style, you know, by the SKU account of what's going on in retail, but we hope to find out what's, you know, what the best sellers are, what is scarce in the marketplace, what consumers are asking for, and what trends they're seeing as we move through the season. And one of the problems I always have with MPD data, in addition to accuracy issues, especially in cross country, was that we had to wait months to get the data. I mean, we were seeing basically December data in March, and at that point it just doesn't do you any good. So what I want to provide to you is timely data that you can actually act upon. So if we start to see things happening at the market level, then perhaps you have a chance to react to that before the trend has run its course. We also plan to ask suppliers what's going on in the industry. And Reese and I have already been on the phone with many of the principals to talk about what they're seeing, you know, what their sales and order strategy is going to be, whether or not they're going to be bringing more product to the market, where they're finding that product, and what they're seeing at the supplier level, including issues with manufacturing and, you know, as COVID spreads and the infection increases around the world, how that might disrupt supply chains, which could play into next season as well as this one. So we're gonna keep the lines very, very open with suppliers. And trail visits, I think all of you know about the trail visit study. And I started working with Chris Frotto maybe 5 years ago on the trail visit study. And I've been working with Reese specifically on trail visits for the past 3 years. And right now we're still in the period where we're trying to increase participation in that study. And the more participation we have, the more accurate the results will be and the more valuable the results are going to be. So I want to admonish you to participate in that if you are representing a ski area. The more we can get, the more we're going to know. We're never going to sell that data. The only people that will really see it are you. And, you know, that's where we're measuring increases in participation and increases in retail, increases in food service, and all the trends that we're seeing over the season. And that's sort of a season end kind of research project. And as Reese was talking about earlier, the really interesting thing that happened with research in COVID is that all the data that was gathered, and this crosses the board. This isn't just for this industry. This is absolutely everywhere. I have to do it in aviation too. The data that we had prior to March 15th of this year is pretty much obsolete now. We cannot use that to project forward. We can't use it for anything other than to talk about history. So this season's results are going to be exclusive to this season to a certain extent. We're not going to be able to project that to seasons that are coming forward, and we're not going to be able to use it for any other purpose than to say this is what happened this season. But in terms of trail visits, it's going to be very important because we're going to be able to see post-COVID how well the industry did at retaining customers and how many new customers we had, how many new participants plan on sticking around, how many new participants bought equipment and participated on the trail. So it's really critical this season to participate in this study so that we can see what the new normal is going to look like and how it compared to the opportunities that we're seeing this season. And finally, we're going to be talking at the very end of the season with suppliers about the wholesale market. You know, it's basically sales and orders. It's something that SIA did for a long time, but, you know, has had some issues with lately. We want to make sure that we're running that study in a way that helps you without exposing you. I mean, one of the big issues with supplier data is that it cannot be exposed. It has to be aggregated. It can never be shared at the brand level. And when you post results, you have to be careful that, you know, a larger brand isn't the only one participating, because that basically exposes their data. And to some extent, I think that may have happened at the end of last year with SIA sales and orders report. So we're gonna work really hard to get that data in and to make sure that every brand that participates understands what their market share was this season and can use that going forward to measure the impact of this very specific season to the seasons that are coming. So again, I mean, that requires some peer pressure, and we'll be working really, really hard with suppliers to make sure that we're getting accurate data and we're aggregating the results and people can figure out what their market share was. I mean, overall, when I consider all this, basically what I'm trying to build is a complete vision of what went on in the market this season. And you can't use one data point. If you use one data point, then you're basically a slave to that data point and you're never going to see the full picture. So by combining consumer, retail, supplier, and ski areas, we hope to be able to provide a very detailed and clear picture of what's going on in the market. And that's our plan. Any questions?
Kelly, I have a couple. Just want to point out what she talked about there, utilizing all the different data sets in harmony or using them together and triangulating that data. That has not been done for cross country before, at least to my knowledge, Kelly, and maybe I don't think you ever did it with SIA back in the day. So this is really a new opportunity for us to really get a complete picture of what's happening in the market. And if this year turns out as we hope, with an increase in sales and skiers and a decrease in COVID, we could get some really good data that can go forward and understanding more about our market that will help all elements, be it the suppliers, the ski areas, the suppliers of gear, the suppliers of equipment for ski areas, in looking at where they are going in the future and where to put their efforts. You mentioned trail visits, and I just want to point out, first of all, nobody sees that data, or at least I don't see that raw data. I don't know what your numbers are. What I do see is that you either did or did not report. So I get a list of who's reported. So your data will not get out into the Ethernet there. It's not being shared. What we do get is a report that does not have any identifiers as to who said what, just a list of who's included. And one of the issues we've had with that data set, and especially this year, is year after year, we have different ski areas report, and our numbers of ski areas have been hovering around 50, 55, but we're not getting the consistency, at least not enough consistency, with the same ski areas reporting every year. So when that data is looked at, sometimes it's not quite making sense. It's not triangulating well with the rest of the market. So it's super important, that we really start to build these data sets so that we've got the history. And one of the big questions everyone is asking is how many skier days are there? How many cross-country skiers are there? And how many ski resorts are there? And, speaking to the ski resorts, one of the things that we have not done is weighted the data based on the relative size of the ski area. That's something I don't know much about, but Kelly does. And that's going to be a really important factor in getting really good data there. Kelly, can you talk a little bit about how to use the data that we hope to get? Because I know one of the issues that we've had over the years, it's happened with MPD, it happened with some of the SAA studies, is you had all this data, but people really didn't understand how best to use it. So maybe touch just briefly on how it will benefit the supplier, how it will benefit the ski area, et cetera.
Yeah, understanding consumer data is super important to being proactive with participants. So if you're seeing consumers talking about anything that they're experiencing that's negative, it gives us a chance to correct that. If we see that consumers are trending towards something like, they want more skate opportunities, then, you can react to that. But the idea is to be ahead of the game and understand what consumers want and give it to them before they even think that, even decide that they want it. So the idea is to stay on the front of the curve with that and understand what consumers are, what is trending with consumer attitudes and consumer perceptions of cross-country ski. And I think you guys all know that a lot of people think cross-country is just for people that like spandex and sweat. And that's absolutely not the case. So, the idea that we're going to see perceptions like that trending throughout the consumer data gives us a chance to try and get in front of that issue and bring more casual participants into the areas. And additionally, I'm just going to say about consumer, if you're a ski area retailer, I really admonish you to create a consumer database so that you can engage the consumers that come into the market this season, get their email address. And I'm not talking about barraging them with marketing materials, but stay engaged with the consumers and stay engaged with them throughout the year. Make sure that they don't forget about cross-country skiing. And if we have the good luck to end this pandemic with a vaccine and by controlling the virus with social distancing and other measures, then we've got a regular season and many to come in front of that, in which consumers that just started cross-country skiing this season might rethink their decision. We want to make sure that they stay engaged with the community. Retail data, again, this is about being able to react to data as it happens. That's why I'm thinking that if we can get that data out maybe 2 weeks after we get it, it gives you a chance to react to consumer trends and retail trends, what's selling, what's not, and that could help you from anywhere from how you display items and what you put in front to basically how you talk to consumers once they come in the door. The supplier data, the information that we're getting from suppliers, generally speaking, you know, everybody wants to know what everybody else is thinking. We hope to help with that without exposing anybody for what they say. Again, this is about keeping information confidential, at the same time providing aggregate information out to the industry so that everybody knows. If there's a huge supply chain problem, then I think everybody's going to be talking about it. You know, we just want to make sure that the entire industry can share in that news. And trail visits, what that helps you to understand is what your market share is. And if you're in a specific area and you don't understand your market share by region, you probably should. If you want to increase your slice of that, you're going to be able to see that. If you need to get financing for a project, especially after this season, you know, I've noticed that a trend in snowmaking has occurred over the past 3 years, and more areas are looking at purchasing that equipment. Well, you know, capital investments require evidence that, you know, that you're going to be able to pay back a loan. This is the kind of information that will help you do that. And just being able to paint a accurate and relevant picture of what's going on in the industry is going to help everybody keep up with what's going on. And that's my vision, is that I'm going to be able to triangulate this data, and we're all going to be able to see exactly what went on for a season and help us prepare for the next. Whether it's, you know, we need to do more work engaging consumers, to, you know, we need to do more work on some specific trend that we see throughout the season. You know, I want to be able to tell that story. And right now, because we don't have very much information beyond, say, you know, some pretty shaky participation data year over year, we can't do that. You know, everybody's flying with what they know in their particular area. Wouldn't you like to know what's going on across the market? I want to be able to tell you that. And that's the crux of the strategy. That's my vision. You know, I always imagine a snow globe where I can look into it from any angle and be able to tell you what's going on.
Kelly talked a little bit about our partners. We have spoken with every supplier, and they are all in, and their part is a little more involved because it's a monthly survey from them, getting information and trends that they're seeing. But all of the suppliers are in. We've spoken with many retailers such as REI, and REI is in and is very excited to be a part of this project. We've looking at that consumer database. One of the things that we're going to reach out to is all of our members, ski areas, to send out that survey, because I'm hoping that you all have consumers. But the Berkey is also in there, as well as REI, to send out that survey link to their people. So it really is super exciting, and coming from the cross country industry, having worked in it for many years, we're really pulling all of it together under the KISSA umbrella to get projects like this done, to get media projects like we're doing. And what I'm seeing is that the group that we have is starting to believe that we are an industry that does have relevance and that does have a future. And if we work together on projects such as this, then we all will benefit. And another part of this research is the media value of being able to talk to media and tell them how many skier days we have and how that relates to the previous year. And all of those pieces are super important. So I think it's super exciting. If there's any questions, please let me know. I've answered a few in there. And if not, anything else, Kelly?
Yeah, two things. I mean, one thing about media, if you've got numbers, they want to talk to you. I mean, and the more the exposure is critical right now. And, you know, I wrote an article about what we expect to see this season, and I've already gotten lots of calls from media about that, and I assume many articles to follow. You know, anytime you can talk to the Wall Street Journal, that's great. You know, get them writing about cross country. Media coverage is going to be key to expanding participation and keeping those participants once it's over. And frankly, I mean, if I go beyond what I'm trying to do this year, one of the things I'd like to do is build a customer journey book, so we can see exactly what the journey is for each type of customer. And this is segmentation. This is the ability to say, okay, I'm looking at customers in Vermont that have X income, the X education, are also biking in the summertime, are trail runners, And this is exactly the kind of language that they want to hear when you're marketing to them. That's what customer engagement does. It helps you get to know your consumers and allows you to segment them so that you can spend fewer resources marketing to them and get more impact out of it. So eventually this is going to move into something even more sophisticated where we just understand our consumers that much better and have the ability to engage them just a little bit more than we would if we didn't have that information. I think it's key to understanding your customers. It's key to understand the new customers. And I'd be working this season to start building some customer personas to share with you. But I think that you know, that's a second step goal, this year's goal, just to get a good look at what's going on in the market. One more thing, since I'm still a member of OIA's research committee, and OIA kind of dumped its research capacity during the pandemic. They fired their research director, so they're going to count on the committee a little bit more. That gives me access full time to the PAC data. So any of that data that I can pull down and give to you, they're surveying monthly. So hopefully we're going to get something out of that, and I'm going to include that in this sort of long list of variables that I want to consider when I'm giving you just an aggregate view of what's going on in the marketplace.
Awesome, Kelly. Thank you so much. If anyone has any questions, you can certainly reach out to me after or anytime, and certainly we will be keeping you abreast of what's going on there. All right, we're moving on to our final presentation of the day, Preschool Ski School. Scotty McGee and George Davis have collaborated on a project to get young children into cross-country skiing and begin building the foundation of a love for the sport. They're going to discuss the components of this program and show you how you can provide a great service to your community, build additional programming, and create incremental dollars. Okay, George and Scotty, I have opened up screen sharing for you.
Fantastic. Hey, everybody. Great to be here. Great to hear all the interesting information and plans for the coming season. We're having snowfall right out to the window right now, so nice to know that winter's on the way.
Yeah, it is. And we're going to try to – we've dry run this, trying to put the presentation on monitors. I'm George Davis, by the way, and I think you just met Scotty. I'm with 22 Nordic. So let us get into Preschool Ski School and get going here. There should be that one up there.
Where's the full screen one?
This one right here.
That one? Oh, yeah, there we go. And, yeah.
Okay, is that Preschool Ski School on everybody's screen? Okay, well, let me just start. Scott's going to do the next couple slides, but as you can see, all the kids running around me laying on the ground, that's during my Nordic 1 level exam. Scott was the evaluator, and we were tasked to have a 15-minute presentation to teach one skill to five-year-olds. Mine was picking up your ski and standing on one foot. So I had a train of balloons behind me. And balloons, beads, and balls are all kitty crack. But as soon as I came out from behind the trees, every kid came up and started stomping balloons, and they eventually tackled me. That's the story behind the slide. Preschool Ski School is a blast. If you haven't took 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds on Nordic skis, give it a try. Go ahead, Scotty.
Nice startup. Yeah, this whole thing kind of started from the inspiration of my own kids and some of the hurdles that I had to clear to get them into cross country. And I had initially purchased some of the strap-on type skis, and my daughter got into those and was kind of like, eh, whatever. Well, you know, if I was trying to teach any newbie how to cross country ski and I gave you strap-on skis, you might say the same. But one day she got big enough, and I put her in the smallest cross country boots we had in the fleet. And I turned around for a couple of minutes, and she was gone. She'd gotten in those tracks and just took off. And it really struck a chord with me that given the right gear and the right environment, that the kids will take off on this, and how can we facilitate? So launching in, oh, we're having a little trouble advancing slides here. Let's try this way.
There you go.
Yeah. So, you know, why do it? Well, to really give a way to an entry level to the sport at a very young age. And, you know, from there, kids could go a bunch of different directions with this. You start with a little one and they could become a lifetime cross country skier. They could take up alpine or snowboard, for example. Any outdoor snow sport, but hopefully not the Game Boy. We also came to realize as we started to think of how to build this into something that could make sense for a business to do, that if you put something together that makes it easy for everybody, that you can easily create enough numbers to make it make sense. We'll get to that in a minute. But it's also good extra work to bring in for instructors. And if you have a program like this, it's great marketing for having stuff going on at your Nordic Center that just about anybody in the Nordic community and beyond, even the Alpine ski community, can really get behind.
You know, like Scotty was saying, it's great in community engagement, you know, to talk around town, or, you know, you run into a parent with their child in Albertsons. They're going like, Mr. George, you know, they recognize you. You start a conversation with the parents. You know, the other part is Snow King. We're able to keep instructors employed and turn them over to in the morning and then turning them over to the Alpine boarding program in the afternoon.
Yeah. So back to obstacles, you know, skiing itself. Well, maybe that is that easy or hard? Well, it kind of depends on how you look at it and what your background is, but somewhere in the middle, maybe. Affording it, you know, between all the gear a parent has to have to ski themselves and then get the kids geared up, and they're going to change, they're going to grow through sizes from year to year. It can actually be, you know, an expenditure. Less than Alpine, we all know that, but it still costs money. And how about the organizing part? Is that easy or hard? If a preschool wanted to get their students out on snow, it's actually pretty hard. They got to round up the gear. They don't know what to do. They don't know where to take them. And so for preschool ski school, the goal is to make it easy. And lastly, you know, it's a win-win-win. It gets really rave reviews. And you watch these kids doing it. You don't have to ask them if they had fun. It's pretty awesome. In terms of the skills that kids will come away with, there's all kinds of body skills, and my wife is running an at-home preschool right now, and movement and music is one of the things they do every day, and you can integrate that into a cross-country ski lesson, easy as pie. This also gives them their dose of Nature RX, if you're not familiar with that, the prescription for good health and well-being. So we looked at, you know, first we did this at the Nordic Center, but still the preschool had to like get their kids in a van, have enough car seats, get there, park, repark after they unload the kids, bathrooms, all that stuff. And we started to wonder, could there be an easier way? So we bundled up the boots and the skis into ski bags and took them to the preschools. And this was really a turning point in the program because it made it available to anyone, anywhere in the valley within a 20-30 minute drive easily. And so it also pointed out to us that you could do it at other places. You could do it at the bottom of the beginner run where at Snow King, where we were teaching alpine and snowboard lessons. You could do it on the groomed parks and in the ungroomed parks and on the groomed pathways, and even the school sports fields, some of which were adjacent to some of the preschool clients. Some of the things worth understanding, you know, that preschoolers typically eat lunch and take a nap. If only we could all do that. But it makes it so it's a little harder to organize preschool ski school in the afternoon. So it's kind of a half day product. But still, you can get a couple of preschool sessions in the morning. It works in snow country. If you don't have reliable snow on your valley floor, next to the preschools, it gets a little harder, but still that version where they would go to where there is snow, even if that were blown snow at the base of a lift-served resort, you still have a great setup to work with. We groom outside the Nordic Center, outside the preschools, by just stomping in a trail and sometimes even improve on that. And I'll get to that in a minute. But also, you know, making it easy. Like if you've ever had a kid, your own kid, or been with a family who's trying to get out on snow, first getting all geared up, I don't want to put that on. And by the time you get them all zipped up and ready to walk outside, what do they say? I got to go to the potty. Oh man, it really makes it hard. But the preschool teacher's involvement in both getting the kids ready, getting them booted up and ready to walk out the door makes it the easiest thing ever for the instructors. And the parents really appreciate that their kids are getting to have this experience without all the hassle that they're used to encountering. As I mentioned before, getting the real gear, getting bar system boots, gives the kids a sense of control right from their first day on snow. So as far as what the instructor profile looks like, there is a certification called Children's Specialist, and it spans all the disciplines, highly recommended for this age group. But as much as anything, having the right outlook and disposition as an instructor, that you're ready to get in the kid mindset, you're ready to make it fun every step of the way, you're ready to figure out games and be spontaneous. And if one kid picks up a snowball and it's safe enough to have a fun snow throwing contest, or I guarantee you, they're going to look at that hill over there in this picture, and they're going to start going up it so they can slide down it, and they're going to fall down, and they're going to learn from it that if they want to do it again, they got to get up. So those are some of the things.
You know, I want to encourage everybody to go to the cross country ski games to play on snow. That's Kim's ski labs. I believe she's out of Canada. It's free access to the kids' games. We took several of those and we simplified them for 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds. We would set up an arena for some of the games. We'd use some of the games on the trail. We got inventive with other games like search and rescue with Minnie Mouse. And I can talk more about that later, but take the time and go over to the ski labs.
Some of the things that help build out the program into something that really presents its full value, enhances the instructional environment, and gives us some go-to activities. It's easy enough for the groomer to push a little snow around and make a little hill, even if it's only 1 or 2 feet high, maybe about a 12 or 20 foot slope like this one here in the picture. Building little things out of snow, even if it's just a snowman, give the kids an attraction. And maybe if that's 100 feet or 200 feet out on the trail, hey, everybody ski to the snowman. it gives you something to do. It's fun to come with some props. We always had some Frisbees or balls, having cones or flags. I was watching the folks installing some irrigation, and I realized that the curve on the pipes that were perfectly the right diameter to stick in the snow with a drill and have a nice archway for kids to ski under. It became part of our mobile program. Whether it's banners or learning mats or maybe a newer idea, but Kinderlift out of Colorado puts together it's basically about an 8 foot, 6 foot wide by 20 foot long mat that you roll out and stake down, but it has all kinds of printed footprints or ski prints on the snow. And so you could get kids to walk in a herringbone. Then you'd go over to the other mat and it shows them how to stand in a wedge, and they'd stand on the wedge one and then move forward to wedge two and different sizes of wedge. And they started to learn some of the stances that are maybe a little abstract to describe to kids, but giving them a picture, stand on the skis, easy, really great. And, you know, matching up with what the preschools are doing with their educational curriculum, whether that's ABCs or maybe looking for prints or saying understanding points of the compass, there's a ton of different ways you could do stuff that complements what the preschool teachers are doing in the school. And just the fact that you ask about it, what are you guys learning in school now? Gives you the springboard to draw that link for people.
1, 2, 3, eyes on me.
George has developed a lot of cues and sort of motto, slogan, things that help bring the kids together. And certainly I mentioned Sing Song in that last slide, and just the kinds of things like the ants go marching one by one, and all of a sudden all the kids know what to do. You didn't have to say, pick up your ski and put it down. So integrating that into your teaching is great. During this time, I also had my kids, and I just wanted to share this because it was super fun to, as my own sort of personal project, but we also used it to groom outside the preschools. And basically I took some cross-country skis from the thrift store, which were pretty fat, like tall in the middle, maybe even an inch and a half. And if you look at that picture on the right, you can see that I cut it off like a ship's prow and put a little spacer at the far end of that ski, and the tips, you can't really see it, but the ski tips are down into the snow on that right-hand picture. It made for a reversible sled that you could either groom by sticking the kid or a load of snow in the sled, dragging it along. And if the kid got tired, you could stick him in the sled and leave it in groomer position, like leaving a couple of tracks. Or you pull the webbing through the sled, and the harness is now on the opposite end and the ski tips are forward. And I used that technique once when I was out with my daughter, and all of a sudden we were within 50 feet of a big bull moose. Turned that sled around and got her out of there. but yeah, that's kind of what it looked like. This is hard snow. It's not really leaving much of a dent here, but you can see how it leave a track that the kids could follow, and having that gave a great visual cue for him to just get in and start kicking and gliding.
Well, I'm going to kind of jump in here now. The big thing with preschool ski school is it's built on trust. And one of the things when I took over the program after Scott went on to better things was it sat for a year. I jumped in. I'd been teaching preschool ski school for 3 years now, but ran it last year. Is creating and building trust with the preschools. Preschools control the access, not the parents. If the preschool director believes in you and trusts in you, she'll communicate that to the parents and say, this is a great program. That was very, very big on my list, is to build that trust. And that trust came in really simple ways, showing up on time, actually showing up early. Sometimes we got a lot of snow. I'd bring a shovel and I would dig it out. I would go back and I would share pictures that we took. I never send pictures out. I allow the preschool director, she communicated to parents. So building trust is very, very important. How do you do that? Okay, attitude. What do you do when you fall down? Dead bug? And then you laugh, you get back up. Yeah, dead bug is how we teach. One of the first things we teach for the kids how to get up. We want them to learn to do that on their own, and 90% of them do. Okay, profitability. This is from last season. We had 173 students, ages 3, 4, and 5, and we had 4 sessions. We did it in 2 8-week blocks in January. A 4-week block in January, a 4-week block in February. Some preschools opted to do the full 2 months. Others, they would just opt to only do 4 sessions. $25 for a child, $100. Our gross was $17,300. Instructor wages are what we paid out. Now, instructor wages, I'll have to admit, what I did is I was the highest paid instructor on the staff at $16.50 an hour. And that's the Nordic side. Our lowest paid instructor was $3. The way we did our system was for every child you taught, you get $3. Consider this instructor wages as an average, because I took, for a class of 16, I'd take my $16.50, add it to add 8 students, the $10 an hour instructor, she got her students, That was 3 hours worth of teaching because we added the first 15 minutes as teachable time because we're booting up in 15 minutes after. So for an entire 4 hour morning, and you'll see that later, we had 3 hours of teach and 1 hour of non-teach, which is your basic wage. Overhead, that's what I played for props, cleaning supplies, equipment maintenance. Our margin would be 66% on average. We had a few classes of down there about 57, and that may be because they were all three-year-olds and there were nine kids. But with three-year-olds, we thought it was best to go ahead and put two instructors out with them. Again, part of that is building that relationship and trust. Startup cost, $3,200 to $3,300. That's 18 pair of boots and 12 pairs of skis, but that's at standard retail price. You know, I would encourage you to contact your area rep, or if you buy from your local retailer at a discount, you get your different pricing there. Duffel bags, $60, Amazon, you know, $30 each, you know, for boots and skis, blankets, because we have a few schools that wanted to meet us at one of the parks where it's groomed with tracks. They would hop out of the van. We had the blankets laid out, and we put their boots on there. Props, $100 and $200. A lot of my props was a 3-foot-high Minnie Mouse. I had little cones. We'd create arenas. I had balls that were probably 2 inches in diameter that were squishy. We'd play squirrel and nuts, which you'd see on the Scree Lab. Where's the wolf? You know, props are cheap. Startup costs may be as low as $15 to $20 of PSS annual revenue. I think the fleet that I inherited from you was already amortized out.
Yeah, that's what you paid for.
And over time, you know, what we've done is just added new boots and new skis in. Highly recommend Velcro boots. Here's some details. So we kept our class sizes 8 to 16. At our current wages, 6, we make a little bit of money. We're basically breaking even. Again, I would still send one instructor, or I'd go out to a class of 6. I want to keep them engaged. Class ratio, we have 16, we have 2 instructors. Class time, 50 minutes, 2 sessions a day, at the same or different preschools. So I would arrive at 9:45. I would stand outside. I would set out all the skis. My other instructor would go inside and help the instructors boot up, help the teachers boot up the kids. We'd be on the snow by 9 or 9:05, and we'd end at 9:50 or 9:55. Our current fleet is 31 pairs of skis, and they're going to go from 90 centimeters to 120. 90% of the skis you'll use are going to be in the 90 centimeter to 100 centimeter to 110 centimeter range. Very few kids are on 120s. Now this year, we've bumped it up to 45 pairs of boots. That's to address COVID, because what we want to do is give fresh boots to the second class. We don't use poles. Terrain can vary. As Scott has already covered about no machine grooming necessary or deeper snow, you can kick out a track.
One of the things that came to mind while earlier in the day we were talking about COVID response, and in my assessment of the local preschools, they're not asking kids to wear face masks all day, the 3 to 5 year olds. And that gets to be a tough thing. And part of the way to manage that is that the families, the preschools, they're kind of more insular units. And here it's just an extension of it. But once we get outside, as was mentioned earlier, many of those concerns are taken care of. So can this kind of thing proceed in a year like this? I think so.
And I'll just harp something, add on to something that Scott added. At the end, I'll share a survey I sent out to the preschool teachers asking them about their COVID concerns. And we had some pretty strong answers with them. They all but one wanted to go forward with the program. So PSS sample day, that's my lovely wife, Ramona, 8:45. And I've kind of went through that, arrived at preschool, instructor brings only boots indoors, 9:05, 9:55, 10:15, we depart and go to the next lesson. Who makes the smallest bar system boots? If we have any of the manufacturers on this, you know, I think we got, I know what Fisher is. We just went to the website to pull up Alpina, Machus, and Rossi. So your guys are welcome to weigh in on the question and answer. Now, I can send this to you. I'm a believer in plagiarism as the highest form of flattery. This is a letter that I sent out when I wanted to give value added to the program, because when I came into it, you know, it went unnurtured for a year after Scott left, and we want to bring value added. Plus, we want to justify going from $20 to $25 an hour. So you can see, I'm not going to go through the entire letter, but I want you to take a look. We did four blocks, a four-week and eight-week block. So, you know, learning goals, and then the eight-week block. Kids picked up skiing so quickly that essentially in a four-week block, we were out playing games on day on session two or three. But look on the bottom for if you want product extension, graduation celebration. What we did was at the ski area, even though we want them to go back in the Nordic, Snow King still owns the program. So what we did was learn to alpine for free. And the kids came out, and parents brought the kids out. And for five-year-olds, it was a 3-to-1 ratio. And instructors gave them a morning of alpine skiing. And then we comped the parents for the afternoon to come ski with their kids.
And you watch those kids that have been on cross country get into alpine skis for their first time. It's a whole different picture.
That's who we are, Scott and George. Now, questions. What can we do? What can we answer for you folks?
I'll add one more thing first here on our last slide. At the front and the back of this presentation, I just put in a link that's pretty easy to remember. The capitalizations don't matter. But if you wanted to share this or, you know, tap into this for anybody to, you know, want to, you need to sell the idea in order to implement it, feel free to use this in any way you want. And hopefully we'll see some new preschool ski school programs crop up.
Yep. Well, one thing I want to add on that, these are pictures of 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. Please do not make these public. You can share them with your clients, but it's for your access. But I've always made it a rule that I've never published on Facebook, Instagram, anything with our preschool ski schools. That was up to the ski school director to share those. So questions.
I don't see any quite up there yet, but I had a question about COVID. So you're teaching these kids to get up on their own. So ultimately they don't need assistance. So you could be able to maintain the 6 feet during this COVID time. Is that correct?
A lot of times kids will need help getting up at the beginning until they sort of figure out the whole dead bug and putting both skis parallel and not having their skis crossed. However, one of the things we didn't really highlight too much was that the preschool teachers come out on snow. A lot of times they're taking pictures or video to share with parents. Kid falls down. We don't have to ask them to walk over and help the kid. In fact, more often we're saying, like, let them get up on their own. So, having the preschool teachers present is really what makes possible that 8-to-1 ratio, which is what makes possible keeping it profitable.
Reese, if I can, I'm going to try to jump out of here and bring up another slide to share with you, if we can bring it up. I don't think I can share it.
Is it that one?
Yeah, that's the survey. What I did was send out a survey to preschool ski survey to our preschools, and had 7 questions that basically asked them, what do you, and this is regarding COVID. We laid out the COVID procedures and what we would be doing. There you go. I think you got it up.
Yep.
I don't know if it's centered. As you can see, like question one, would you prefer Snow King PSS instructors enter your building to boot up the preschoolers or boot up outside? and we got responses that way. Would you prefer preschool teachers to boot up at the boot up the preschoolers and then bring them outside? And here's two more questions. You go down to seven. You can see that 83%, and this is a group of seven schools that responded. We'll have two probably drop out this year, one because of transportation issues. The other is they've had multiple COVID cases and they don't want to just participate through the fall. So you can see that everything, again, it goes back on building trust with the preschool.
And that you can customize and tailor your protocols with each client.
Yes, each client, some want us to stay outside, they'll bring the kids out. Others say, bring one instructor in. So there are COVID concerns, and just like any program you set up with those COVID concerns, as long as you adhere to the procedures, if you do temperature checks on your instructors, they do temperature checks on their kids when they arrive, you have a plan in place. Should one of each group have a fever, and you stick to those procedures, it is my strong belief you will be fine. And I'll leave it at that. Any other questions?
Awesome. Richard just said that they've implemented a skills checklist as kids progress to make sure the basic skills are getting taught. Makes it easier for instructors and easier to show progress to the parents, which sounds like a great idea. When you first mentioned this, the preschool ski school to me, I immediately thought of just an additional revenue stream for your ski areas also. And certainly with COVID now and so many people going to school from home or homeschooling and parents at home, this could be a great diversion to get those kids active on a snowy weekday morning that will buy the parents some time when they get home as the kid snoozes, et cetera. So, my immediate thought was, yes, there's the preschool collaboration element, but also a program like this could be implemented just as part of the ski school for this younger set of kids.
Well, you know, another start, if you want to step, just put your big toe into it, the townships and areas in the snow areas, if they have a parks and recs, the Parks and Recs usually has a daycare, and the Parks and Recs here has been banging down my door to offer during their toddler time Nordic skiing for the 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. That's a easy entry point to get your feet wet if you don't want to make the initial investment. I came out of the military and another franchisee. And when Scott asked me my first year teaching at Snow King if I'd like to teach kids at 59, I thought, oh, my back is going to kill me. But you know what? I ended up enjoying it, and I loved it, and that's how I really got into PSS. The relationships, I mean, if you have a passion for skiing, and I say I do, and I have a passion for seeing kids smile and have a great time, I highly encourage you to do it, and it just builds. You're making money, and at the same time, you're building goodwill.
And the next generation of skiers.
Awesome. Love that the most. Fantastic. I don't see any other questions, and we are approaching the 4 o'clock hour. So I think we should wrap up. Thanks, Scotty and George, for this. That was awesome. And thank you all for attending today's call. I know that was a lot of information over multiple hours, but we did it. So that's awesome. The next Zoom roundtable is December 9th, and we will be discussing, operational changes to, with those ski areas that are open and what they've learned. So kind of a learnings discussion should be super interesting. Special thanks to all of our presenters for the day, and special thanks to Yellowstone Track Systems for sponsoring today's event. I believe there is 1 minute left in the silent auction. We're at $690. So if somebody could push us over 700, that would be fantastic. And, other than that, I hope to see you all on the trails. Thanks again. And, we will see you soon, I hope.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Reese. Thanks, everyone.